Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Program. It's a little bit late getting started. I got some updates from Bill Gates a little bit ago. You know, he does that. Bill and me were buddies, and he was busy updating my computer, and that caused us to get to air just a teensy tiny bit late. But you know what? We're here now, which is cool. We're gonna have a lot of fun tonight, or something. We're gonna have something tonight. Coming up in about 28 minutes or so, we've got a conversation coming with one of my absolute favorite journalists, someone from over at Media Matters. In other words, we will be joined presently by Eric Bollert. Eric is the author of Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush, and Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. And he is as sharp an authority on the skeevy, sleazy goings-on over at Radio Rwanda as you are likely to hear. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. He's been a contributing editor for Rolling Stone. And I think we're going to have, he's also most notably a senior fellow at Media Matters for America, one of the hero groups, as far as I'm concerned, in the struggle for actual information as opposed to the vile propaganda that flows out of that sewer that was constructed by Rupert Murdoch. That having been said, however, it is not lost on me what today is. Today is the 15th day of December, 2010. We are nearly halfway done with the month of December. We just got done with the first week's fundraising. You know, well, that's okay. We'll be a little bit late. Whatever. But we just got done with that. But we're halfway done with the month of December. We're 10 days from Christmas. 10 days from Christmas. Now, the war, there's only 10 days left in the war on Christmas. Get your licks in now. That's where we are. But it's also Wednesday. The middle of the week. You know, hump day. Downhill to Friday. But if you are a long follower of this program, you know that, in fact, it is ever so much more than that. You know, in fact, that this is prayer meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren. Hallelujah, glory, hand me a snake and don't make it a cold one. I'm feeling frisky. Minister of Music, if you would come forward, please, and lead us in our offertory hymn, we would be mightily grateful. And remember, please don't make change in the offering plate as it comes around. Just hit that little old button right in the middle of it. It's a brass plate with a little red velvet base to it. And you just, there's a little PayPal button right in the middle of it. You just hit that PayPal button and you'll be making your weekly alms, if you will, your tithing to reason and common sense. Glory, hallelujah. Brother, would you come forward and lead us, please?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I wish... Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, penny and moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh-ee-ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang, and Merry Christmas. I love you. Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. Welcome, welcome, one and all. Now, don't be standing out there in the vestibule eyeballing them 20-year-old butter vents in the glass dish. Don't you do it. You just get right in here. Come on down that blood-red altar, brethren and sistren, and get on your knees and lay your hands upon the subwoofer. Yes, glory. Put your hands upon that subwoofer and reach the power flowing down from the server on high. Amen and amen. I am Archpope, Priest, Rabbi, Imam, Elder Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Amen and amen. Hallelujah, glory. It is Wednesday, Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and brethren and sisters, I have stories to tell you. I have stories for you, glorious stories. There is a new star, a new star rising from the horizon, speaking truth to power, glory. His name is Brother Doug Giles. Hallelujah. He is a crusader out of that Sodom and Gomorrah of South Florida. He's the senior pastor of Clash Church. Even named, I don't think Joe Strummer is going there, but maybe there'll be a lawsuit, who knows. Clash Church. And he's decided to explain to his Christian flock why it is that heathen, secular humanist, demoncrats don't like Sarah Palin. Are you ready? Here we go. Oh, he is hip looking. He's got some. He's got him some gelled up hair. And he's kind of slickety-faced, like he's had, he's just all scrubbed, and he's got him a Henley shirt with a dragon on it. Dragon! We'll have to have a talk with Brother Giles about his dragons. Anyway, he's backed, among other things, by the magazine Human Events. Yeah, they come from Regnery Publishing, remember? They're behind the great Americans like Oliver North and Mike Huckabee and Chuck Norris. Amen, amen. Doug Giles explaining why atheist, secular, humanists don't like no Sarah Palin.
Welcome to The Clash with your host, Doug Giles.
Hey, this is Doug Giles. You're watching Clash Television. And you know what? According to the progressives, women can't be real women if they don't fit the progressive script. Yes, if a woman doesn't march to the left horse dung definition regarding what they, whoever the heck they are, have determined constitutes a real woman, well, you know what? She's illegit. For instance, for the shemales at now and their misandrous ilk, a woman is not a woman in their estimation if she's not cool with killing unborn babies, if she's not into hating men who act like masculine men, like that handsome rascal right there. Number three, if she's not into...
I think he just pointed at a guy and said, handsome rascal. Did you notice the shemales at now? Yeah, see, this is how bigotry works. The National Organization for Women, because they don't bow, scrape, and kowtow to a filthy right-wing interpretation of gender stereotypes, doesn't even get to have their gender anymore. I'll tell you a little secret. Back when he was talking about the shemales at now this is a real flashy video with all kinds of stuff going on behind him. There's an American flag and him holding up his fist like it's 1968 in Mexico City, only it says Clash. But when he says the shemales at now, it's an editorial cartoon of a really, really obese person who I guess is presumably not really female. In a hot pink bra, panty, and slipper set, pecking away with one hand at a keyboard while holding a coffee mug in the other. Oh, we got a real sick one, brothers and sisters. We got one worth keeping our eyes on. Let's go back and hear that again. What do you say? Sure.
In their estimation, if she's not cool with killing unborn babies, if she's not into hating men who act like masculine men, like that handsome rascal, right?
You know what that handsome rascal has done? That handsome rascal has killed him a Kodiak bear and is standing with the rifle behind its corpse. That's what a masculine man does. Masculine men are killers.
There. Number three, if she's not into being a mannish lesbian.
Mannish lesbian. You know what? It may be earthquake time again. Poor South Florida. What's his image for a mannish lesbian? Why, it's a photo of the former Chastity Bono who underwent... Can you imagine your world being so upside down that you're willing to undergo massive surgery just to be the person that you really, really are? Chastity Bono, now Chaz Bono, who underwent gender reassignment surgery. But you know what? That's just funny. That's just funny to Doug Giles.
Take care now. If she's not into blaming every global ill on Old Glory, and if she's not into worshiping, big government. Yep,
yeah, what's that? What? Wait. Can't let those go by either. One is a photograph of some Code Pink protesters protesting the war. The banner they are marching behind says... I don't know. I can't tell what the banner they're marching behind says. But it is followed with what's he say when he makes that high voiced I don't have any testicles noise? Hold on.
Oh, glory, and if she's not into worshiping, big government. Yep.
Yeah, big government. The image there behind him for that one is a caricature of Obama standing there and Karl Marx with his arm around his neck, his forearm resting on his shoulder like they're buddies. The sign says Obama Marx with the sort of Obama symbol from the campaign, only it's been transformed into a blue hammer and sickle with a red, white, red stripe and a red star.
Ladies, you're not a real woman if you don't agree with their garish political description of what it really means to own a uterus. Now, to be specific, here's 10 reasons why I believe that...
You know what I love? I love it when right-wing, pasty-faced, doughy guys talk about what it means to own a uterus. Now, not 2 minutes ago, he was criticizing Chastity Bono for becoming Chaz Bono via an intensely painful procedure known as gender reassignment surgery. But that's okay, because a couple of minutes later, he's talking about defining what it means to have a uterus. Issues much? Doug?
Dour Democratic dames dislike Mrs. Palin. Y'all ready? Check this out. Number one, Palin's hot and she can rock a pair of heels, hunting boots, or any garment she decides to wear. And you can tell she knows it and she likes it. But most of the
The first and most important reason to like Sarah Palin is based upon her appearance. You can't call him a Neanderthal. Neanderthals are out. Cro-Magnon? No, I think that's too rough on the Cro-Magnon. You know, I really wouldn't insult any of our proto-human ancestors by calling him one of them. Let's let Doug Giles just be a standalone troglodyte.
Ladies on the left, however, well, they can't. And we all know how...
Wait, what? I gotta stop interrupting this so we can hear the thoroughness of his thought processes.
Our Democratic dames dislike Mrs. Palin. Y'all ready? Check this out. Number one, Palin's hot and she can rock a pair of heels, hunting boots, or any garment she decides to wear. And you can tell she knows it and she likes it. But most of the ladies on the left, however, well, they can't. And we
really? Ladies on the left can't rock. See, he's hip with those keen, cool cat kids. He knows how to use their lingo. Sarah Palin can rock a pair of heels or hunting boots or anything she chooses to wear, but those socialist liberal women's can't. Why not? Why not? Agnes looks great in hunting boots. She is hell on wheels in a pair of 6-inch heels. But, no, she's never had a pair of 6-inch heels. Who am I kidding? I'd wind up like that preacher in Selmer, Tennessee that Patterson Hood wrote the wonderful song about. Remember? The wig? I think we have our bumper. Anyway, onward.
We all know how jealous and petty some chicks can be when they're aesthetically upstage, right?
Aesthetically? No offense, but it's aesthetically. A-E-S-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L-L-Y, Dougie. You just used ascetically, which means that's like people who wander around wearing hair shirts. You know, the folks from your religion. Like, you know, Opus Dei. Come on, guy. You can do better.
Two, they hate Sarah because she's supposedly anti-intellectual. However, I'd love to see Tina Fey, Katie Kirk, or Joy Behag go mano-a-mano with her on any given topic.
Oh, he's so funny, Joy Behag. Did you catch that?
And see who comes off looking like Snooki.
Honestly, I don't know what's going on.
Number three, the feminist
Snooki reference. He is so hip.
Because she's had 5 kids, one who has Down syndrome, and she has never considered offing any of them in her belly. Number four, she believes in the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, and, well, they hate Christians. Number five, she's conservative, and...
Excuse... What? Huh? Who? What?
And they hate conservatives. Number six, she's insane.
Now, this thing is just loaded with hate, but we're the ones who do the hating. Do you begin to see how it is the right wing does its messaging? This thing is 3 minutes long, and it is absolutely chock-a-block with hate. But it complains that the victim of the hate is the one doing the hating. Kind of reminds you of, I don't know, maybe a little radio broadcast about, this morning? The Polish army overran a radio post on our eastern frontier with Poland. We have therefore decided to crush them with the Blitzkrieg. Right?
Extremely successful, and she did it without curtsying to their whack worldview.
He does a lovely curtsy, I have to tell you. I know this is dancing about architecture, but I couldn't resist.
7. Her husband's not some prissy little metrosexual man-child, but an ass-kicking...
Oh, look, he picked an Asian man for a metrosexual man-child.
Alaskan. Number 8, she hunts, she fishes. Her motto is this: shoot it, stuff it, hang it on a wall. Number 9.
Yeah, because God knows that's real sporting. What happened to eat it, Dougie? I bet you wouldn't know which end of a gun to fire, you dumb bastard. Here, you want to shoot my 30-06? Ah, yeah, 30-06, 30-07, whatever it takes.
She's unapologetic to all of the above. And number 10, finally, the Democrats know that if
mercifully
she ever makes it to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, she's going to hand the Democrats their shriveled BB-sized cojones on a free market.
We are just really sexually obsessed today, aren't we, Dougie? Shriveled BB-sized cojones? On a plate? Wow. Let's see, he disses women in general, then tells them that he knows how to define what it means to have a uterus, criticizes a female-to-male transsexual surgery recipient, and talks about this that handsome dude who had done kilt a bear. How long does it take? How long you reckon it's going to take before we catch Doug Giles sniffing meth off of some gay male hooker's ass? I guess it's already happening, wouldn't you?
Flatter, while the majority of the USA gives her a big old standing ovation.
See, that's the beautiful thing about being in the religion industry. You can take like 20% of the populace that actually likes the Caribou Barbie and transubstantiation or consubstantiation or train substantiation. I don't know, train stations. The next thing you know, that's the majority of America, and they're going to be clapping to watch old Caribou Barbie just a-whooping that liberal ass.
And that, my children, is why Palin petrifies the paranormal progressives. The end.
Mercifully. Oh, we got to keep an eye out for this clown. And then again, as David in Tennessee notes, talking about her rocking a pair of heels rocks her look. David notes, isn't that right at the edge of saying she's slut hot? And then David also notes, and this is the scary part, there's likely hundreds of 10 to 12 year olds that are taking this madness deep into their collective cortex. That's who he's aiming for. He's a youth pastor. I mean, he's got him a megachurch of some sort, because he's the senior pastor. But, you know, him with his faded green Henley and his blue jeans and talk about cojones like BBs and, you know, didn't say anything dirty, but there was lots of dirty intonations. And, you know, when you're a fundamentalist, it's the dirty inferences that you like the best, because it lets you just take the dirtiness in your own little mind and run with it through the fields of weeds and Johnson grass wherever you wish, right? David in South Carolina, did he just do a little Richard imitation with that yell? That's exactly what that was, David! Closet much? Doug? Marty, that is Doug Giles of Clash Church. Apparently we've got Jim going early. This guy epitomizes the term Nelly. Wonder how many dresses are in his closet. Oh, I have a feeling this guy's going to get on the radar some. He's going to get on the radar. And you just know, at least, well, you know, it's one of those Forrest Gump moments, isn't it? At least we ain't going to have no humdrum life. Let's see. She can rock a pair of 6-inch heels. Uh-huh. Can she? Can she? I'll bet she can. I'll bet she can. Let's, well. Kate. Bob. There will be no earthquakes for this poor person. We will settle for using a chainsaw, chop him off at his center. He'll never know what hit him, but he needs to go. So many chop jobs, so little time. So true. So true. Dear God. It just sort of makes you... It's crazy-making, isn't it? But it's, you know, this isn't just done for the hell of it. This is done to let you see the messaging. To let you see the opposite world, upside-down kind of thing going on. And the way that, the way they drag their adherents into their web of sick and twisted lies. In honor of Sarah Palin's ability, according to Dougie Giles, to wear a pair of 6-inch heels. This. We'll be back with a conversation with Media Matters' Eric Bollert right here on the Horn.
Come.
sorry about the dead air there. I was trying to get Eric Bullard on the phone, but no such luck. Come on. Give me some love. That was the perfect buffer, wasn't it? Yeah. Interesting commentary coming from the little story about our new buddy Doug Giles there. Poor Ron and Raleigh. Judas Priest, Bob. You know it's going to be a tough email when it starts with Judas Priest, Bob. I just woke up from my nap to this clown. You can't do this to me. By the way, he sounded like he was channeling Ruth Buzzy. I don't know how long it's been since we had a Ruth Buzzy reference on the program, but by God, thanks to Ron, we have now. And then Ron also adds, what the hell was Sarah Palin doing in Haiti amongst the colored folks? This venal, self-aggrandizing, self-serving trollop couldn't give a shit a Haitian or anyone else of color. Yet she has the gall to tell Americans they need to help those poor benighted people. She's without a doubt one of the filthiest of the Republican filth. Well, I forget who it was I saw on Twitter said Haitians is the opposite of Haiti's. Haiti is the opposite of Haiti. You know, that's when a lot of people are hating on you. Apparently, you guys had Doug Giles on the Gaydar before I ever did. Chuck just dropped me a couple of links, one from over at Town Hall. Kind of interesting. Doug Giles writing there, no, it wasn't my idea for Hannah Giles to dress like a hooker and infiltrate Acorn. Now, is this cat... I don't know. Chuck was trying to sort out whether or not Doug Giles is Hannah Giles' daddy or sister or cousin. Yeah, you know, the drive-by truckers have another song of it. It's called The Deeper In. Maybe I should play that, too. I don't know. Maybe Dougie is related to Hannah. It may be a drive-by truckers kind of night. Michael riding in from Sebastopol, California. My Palin theme song is Brian Eno's Babies on Fire. And, you know, you can't really argue with that. And you know what? I gotta give Ron a little bit of Ron and Raleigh a little bit of credit. You know, I got an email that started Judas Priest, Bob. At least it didn't start Rob Halford, Bob. Then there might. But then again, with a guy who calls his church Clash Church. Come on. No, I'm betting you. Doug Giles has rocked some Judas Priest somewhere back in the day. Oh, it's feeling kind of like a musical Wednesday. It really is. Gracious sakes. Yeah, there they are. I wonder if this is the processional hymn for, for Clash Church.
I need it all, so I need it.
you can kind of hear that during the processional at the Clash Church, can't you? From the absolute classic London Calling, that is the Clash, and Hateful. Anything I want, he gives it to me. Anything I want, he gives it to me, but not for free. Now, that's why the plate passes around. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. It's 20 minutes before the hour, and I guess I'm going to have to tender my apologies. I had booked and scheduled Eric Bollert for the program this evening for about 6:30 p.m. because that's generally where I book guests, when I book guests. And I guess it's not going to happen. Doggone it. Of course, some of these things can often be remedied when one has a staff, but I can't really just, because I've done it in the past and it's really icky. I hate just shutting down, I hate shutting down the program while I sit and work the phones. So, you know, my apologies. My sincere apologies. Anyway, it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and like I said, it's feeling kind of musical tonight. I sang last night, didn't I? Yeah, God. Well, there's another parody entered my brain. I won't give you the full version. But did you run across this? Oh, could it be? I don't know. Well, we shall see. And let's see here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning.
From Japan.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
Robert.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Long time no talk to.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, November, December, that's when we actually end up working here, so we university professors and all. So
That's true, and you know what? Why not? It would be a lot more fun to have your major annual holiday during decent weather, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, spring, you know, so... But, yeah, some good news. Finally got tenure, so that messes up.
Oh, glory.
Yeah. Nothing like job security.
Without a doubt. So this means you're fairly safe for the foreseeable future now?
Yeah, for the next 13 years. I was on, you know, yearly contracts, and the problem with yearly contracts is that you don't actually end up spending a whole lot of money because you're not sure if you're going to be around for the next year. So that's the big problem with Japan is that a lot of people don't have tenure or job security. Kazumi got rid of that. He was the Japanese Ronald Reagan. And once that went out the door, labor deregulation, it was kind of like NAFTA. The economy went down because, you know, 30% of the population became, you know, on contract, you know, 1-year contracts or 3-year contracts, whatever. And there, you know, no one's spending, so the, you know, corporation's kind of flipping out, you know, why is consumer spending down, so. But, you know, that's never coming back, the free trade stuff is going to be here until the end of civilization. And I don't ever see them ever rolling back these, labor deregulation laws, so.
I got to tell you, Robert, it's a little bit of a bummer for me because I like to think that maybe there's somewhere on Earth that this garbage can't reach, but you just kind of said no.
No. I mean, even now they're doing the TPP. What is TPP? Is the free trade with the food for Japan, and it looks like Japan may cave on that. I don't know. Which was kind of stupid because last year they were trying to increase the food self-sufficiency here, and that's going to just do the exact opposite. So I don't know what's going to happen there. It's everywhere. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know about the Tory thing, election in Britain, right?
Yes.
And you know about Murdoch being involved in that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then after they got elected, it was payback time for Murdoch, and so the BBC budget got cut. Big time. So, I mean, because one thing a company hates is competition. I mean, that's rule number one. So, this is not about increasing competition at all. It's about consolidation. And so, yeah, the BBC budget got cut. So, it's all this manipulation going around, and it's either Japan or Britain or wherever country you're looking at. It's just amazing. So,
and again, it is a mad race to the bottom.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. It's kind of interesting because I've got this Amazon Kindle here, which is a great little toy actually. Because I'm getting books from America by post, you know, it ends up to be quite expensive. And
English language bookstores in Kyushu are something less than one on every corner.
Getting, maybe 20 books or so, and you know, so it's quite nice to actually get a book for like $9 or so. So I got a lot of poetry books here, and the first book I actually downloaded was one of the recommendations that one of your callers made back in January, I think. It was The End of Money and the Future of Civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm still kind of going through that because it's an economics book, and it's kind of hard to read in terms of the last part of it because it's very economics and basically going back to the idea that the future of this economy is collapsing. And so it was kind of an interesting read, and they talked about really if you were to understand mankind's history, you look at the money that was related to each event. And you can understand exactly what happened as a relation to what happened to the money, which was basically devaluing it and, adulterating the currency. So it was an interesting book, and it was kind of interesting in the sense that one of the issues, like in Germany, be it World War I, people were buying gold, and they were buying gold to have that security.
Do you suppose there were ads in the Daily Zeitung that said, buy gold now, there's never been a better time to buy gold, gold is your best hedge against inflation and world wars?
Yeah. And so in this first, I mean, they made a very interesting argument that didn't go over very well. Because what happened was they had all this gold, and then society broke down, so the farmers weren't farming anymore, and the people were not trucking the produce to the cities anymore because that whole machinery, social work machinery, broke down. And so what they ended up doing was trading their gold bar for a piece of broccoli. Okay?
Oh, Jesus. And you mean even gold can devalue?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, even we had a show that was on our Japanese TV about this because that's finally gotten onto the radar of the Japanese because we are number one in terms of total debt relation to GDP. I think it was like 220 to 220 billion, and Ireland's 120 billion, and we are number one. We far exceed everyone else in terms of debt. The only problem with they're not messing with us is that the Japanese people are funding the debt. So there's no outside investors that can screw with us. So in that respect, I mean, we're pretty much safe. But this did get on the radar. So they were showing how all these Japanese women like bags, but they don't like the cheap bags. They will spend $1,000 or $10,000 on a bag, easily.
Handbag, Prada.
Handbags, yeah.
Dolce and Gabbana.
The brand names. Keep going, yeah. So they were showing how these women were trading in their Gucci bags for a bag of vegetables, and they were so happy to get the vegetables, you know. And then the farmers are going, wow, we're cleaning up here. But that didn't go over well because the following year they went broke because they were all on the pesticides and the fertilizers and they didn't know about organic farming at all. And so they weren't able to trade in their Gucci bags for the pesticides and the fertilizers. You see how that goes, right? So they went bankrupt and there was no produce for the following year. And so the whole society just collapsed in this scenario. On the TV, in Japanese TV. So that's, The End of Money and Future Civilization makes that very cognate argument that even if you buy gold, it's a rather insane idea.
Well, because of the weirdness of how my head works, Robert, I often wonder, because if you read your ancient history, as I am prone to doing, there's always, they conquered and they discovered a hoard of 50,000 talents of gold and 30,000 talents of silver or something like that. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And if we all, because this is a rational conversation, we all understand that matter is neither created nor destroyed. Where is it? Where is it? I mean, because the stuff was, you know, it every now and then you'll see one of those stories where some guy out walking his dog in the English countryside while he's carrying his metal detector will notice a hoard of Roman coins. But I got to figure it all didn't get buried. You know, is it just melted down and reused? Is that the gold that's in the 6-foot-tall letters around St. Peter's with the Bible verses in it? Where is it?
Oh, yeah. Well, so as a result of this book, I got two more that I bought just as out of curiosity. I'm getting, it's a balance between economics books and poetry books and cooking books, okay? The other one is The Dollar Meltdown, which is Charles Goyette, and the other one is, get this one, because we talked about this before, Aftershock, Protect Yourself and Profit, get this, Profit in the Next Global Financial Meltdown. And see if anyone's going to profit from this meltdown, right? These are right-wingers, and these, now, as you know, the right wing is kind of split in different fractions, okay? You have the fundamentalist, you have the military people, you have all kinds of groups, and these are the people that are actually, they were actually against the war, and they actually hated George Bush, and because they realized their money is being flushed down the toilet, and their investments are, you know, going south. But they're all in this idea that they're all saying, okay, the future is going to go down the toilet, but this is how you can stay ahead, okay? And it's quite interesting because, like with the dollar meltdown, he recommends, and at the end of the day, stocks, okay, commodity stocks and oil commodities. Let's talk about commodities, okay? Now, why would you invest in commodities and hoping that the commodities, which is your bread and your, you know,
pork bellies,
oil and your milk, yeah, would go up? Because unless you're a robot and you don't eat food, then I could see where you might profit from that. But if you're, you know, if you're paying through the nose at the supermarket, you're not profiting from your investment, right?
Right. But commodities still pay in money, and if the money's not worth anything,
exactly. Right. So that's the other thing, is that they kept recommending all these stocks, but if the money, if there's the dollar meltdown, then that don't, you know, doesn't make any sense because you're holding dollars, which are worthless.
And see, this is not just an academic discussion, Robert, because I don't know if you caught this yesterday, but I guess, we've had one of those tear up the credit card moments, because Moody's has now announced, as of yesterday, that the U.S. bond rating will go through the toilet with the Great Compromise being passed.
Oh, okay. So they weren't happy about the millionaires getting a tax cut, or they're not happy?
No, they're not happy at all.
Okay. Well, I thought that was happening because that was in the Aftershock, Protect Yourself, blah, blah, blah book. Okay. And you all don't realize. Now, some of this was interesting. I completely disagree with the idea of profiting because, you know, if someone that strives to profit from someone else's misery is nothing but a cockroach. But it was interesting to look at their scenarios and their descriptions of what's going to happen. And it was mind boggling because unless you're, you know, in denial, there is some real big ass shit coming down the pike in the next couple of years, and that was partly related to what you were talking about. And the first thing is going to be the inflation. Inflation is going to skyrocket. And the dollar is going to really, really drop, which means, and this is a bad thing for Japan too, because I mean, this is not where I'm saying I'm sitting pretty, you know.
Even in our reduced state, it is still true that when the United States catches a cold, the world gets pneumonia.
Yeah. So they make several categories about, you know, okay, these are the economies that are going to get hit big time. This is in second group. The ones that really suffer will be the poorest of the poor, of course, Africa, Haiti. Then Japan, and then a couple other countries will get hit, and so on. It was an interesting thing because 2008 Okay, you remember that the meltdown there, right?
Yes.
And the Japanese exports went down 70%, Bob. 70%, okay? Now, if the Japanese exports go down, you think the yen will go down, right? Because without exports, the yen has no value. No, it went up 30%. You know why it went up 30%?
Because no, that one's lost on me. No, why?
Because the investors thought the yen was a safe haven compared to the dollar.
Oh, Jesus. And then, of course, again, if the dollar goes to hell, your neighbor across that narrow body of water there, they've got problems all their own.
Oh shit! I mean, it's going to be because the yuan
has no actual cash value,
right?
Absent the dollar,
right?
And it's not like you can, and frankly, if I understand correctly, it's not like you can go hide in the euro right now either.
No. I mean, what I've done when George Bush, I mean, 10 years ago, I've been buying Swiss francs because I'm thinking, you know, I hate the word believe. You hate the word believe. But, you know, what can you believe in anymore? If you can't believe in the yen, you can't believe in the dollar, you can't believe blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, Switzerland, they got the gold, and it's kind of independent, probably the safe thing. So that's where I'm putting my kids' college money in, too, not just my own, you know. But
probably not a bad strategy.
Yeah, because at least they're not getting into any wars. It's kind of semi-independent, and the Swiss do money. You know, they're quite good with the money. So, and you need a place where it's not corrupt. So, I mean, it's coming down to Bob countries that are. I mean, basically, it's either the corrupt or not or the non-corrupt. And New Zealand was number one on non-corrupt. And
right.
Japan is pretty good in non-corrupt. I mean, it's a very clean, it's a very safe country. Some debt problems, though, but I can go down the street anywhere at night.
Where does Germany land on that scale?
It's fairly high, yeah. Fairly high up there. But do you think, I think that corruption index came out. What was it, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months ago? And, you know, New Zealand was number one and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, basically, and of course, Africa was, you know, on the bottom.
Right, because really, because Africa is still the playground of the mega-rich extraction companies in large part.
Yeah.
Whether it be gold or diamonds or oil or gas or coal.
Right.
Or, you know, I can't imagine that India did too well. Because of their willingness to bribery is rampant there, is it not?
Right, exactly. Right. So I mean, it's kind of like you can't do anything with a corrupt country. I mean, you can't reform. You can invade it. You can invade it and try to take it over, but you're never going to change it. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like a crazy person in a way. You can't change a crazy person, especially if he likes being crazy, which is usually the case. But the future is kind of bleak in terms of just the United States and how the next couple of years is going to turn out, because even in the Aftershock book they said, well, you know, the stocks are going to take a hit. Okay.
And the thing is we're addressing this, Robert, in a sort of rational, straightforward fashion. But if this conversation gets had on the right wing radio, The thing that will follow this conversation is an ad about buying freeze-dried food, then an ad for buying gold, then buying for an ad for buying instant water just at Hot Fundy.
Right.
But that's no answer either, is it? I mean, how long can filling your basement with 50-pound bags of rice and beans actually last?
Well, let me see. I've got about a year and a half of rice saved up, but for this kind of crap you need about 7 years.
Well, that's my point. I mean,
that's another thing that I want to talk about. This ties into the religious thing. So I got a book on, because I said I don't know what I'm doing, because I'm right across the straits from Korea, and we got kind of nervous about last month.
Yeah, it gets a little edgy.
Yeah, I mean, and we can have a lot, you know, maybe 10 million people from South Korea in my city in about a week time, which would cause the population to go up tenfold, and, you know. So that's one reason. But the issue there is I got this one book, and it was interesting. And lady's from Utah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and she's a Mormon. And if you download a lot of stuff about storing food, you will notice in the fine print on about most of these.
Mormon.
It's done by the Church of Latter-day Saints. Now, why would these God-fearing people who believe that God will take care of them, that a sparrow falls to the ground, blah, 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 don't worry, don't you worry pretty head about you because God cares about you, why would they have all this food stock stuff? And this woman had a picture of her, and it was a goddamn bunker, Bob. It was.
Well, because they are going, that's how they're going to be the ones who win.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want, hey kid, you want some food? Well, just swear allegiance to Joseph Smith.
That's right. Or they'll just wait till you or their neighbors die off, and then they take over their home and blah, blah, blah. Thanks.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's quite interesting.
And that's why those self-same ads, that's why Glenn Beck hustles them, because they are all Muslim.
Yeah.
They are all Mormon dodges.
Yeah. It's quite interesting because even in this one book, it's beyond grim. But they say, well, the United States will pull out of it, and I'm thinking, whoa. I mean, one of my colleagues is Korean, and he teaches economics, and I've proofed his papers a lot for the past 4 years or so. And the study of economics is a very hypothetical study, okay? And so it's always divorced from the reality of the social reality and the labor reality. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think if the stock market crashes down to 1,000 and the dollar is worth, you know, nothing, that the United States is going to just come out of this just fine. It's going to tear itself apart. I mean, look, if there's a collapse, are you going to have less radical leaders or more radical leaders in the United States?
If it all goes sideways? I would say you will have more radical leaders, but they will be more radically right-wing.
Exactly, right. So you're looking at a Glenn Beck presidency or a Rush Limbaugh presidency, I mean, you know, down the rabbit hole. So, and I see the United States just tearing itself apart. And even if you got your little food stock in the United States, it don't matter because your right-wing neighbor, who's going to have 10 guns, is going to come.
And no food.
And no food because he's been buying his flat-screen TV and, you know, SUV and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's going to come over and get your food. So.
And at that point in time, they will kill for it.
And they will kill for it and take your wife and children, you know, whatever. I mean, at least in the United States, in Japan, we don't have that gun problem. So, I think the Japan will come out of it better because there is a great deal of cooperation. You've got to look at the social fabric of the society.
Oh, you've got a much healthier approach because you've still got, because I guess it comes out of ancient Japanese society. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But there is a sense of social cohesion that America does not have and likely will never have and has never had.
Has never had, yeah. And, I mean, this endless thing of competition, and compete, I mean, it's killing the states. I mean, and it's just, I mean, that's one reason I just left, you know. But, you look at these books and it's kind of like, it's beyond grim. I mean, I just don't know what to tell you.
Well, I guess the question is, I mean, you know, the fundies don't hesitate. They've got billboards all over Nashville, Tennessee, even as we speak, saying the end of the world is May the 21st, 2011. Because their cult leader said so. No, really.
I believe you.
The question is: Is it realistically possible to look at the scenarios that you've described, Robert, and get a sense of when?
They said, I mean, they're kind of hedgy because it's economics, and so they're saying it's going to be between 2011 and 2014, but no later than 2014 is when the shit's going to hit the fan, big time. I mean, in a serious way.
Who's better off, somebody in a city or somebody in the country?
Somebody in the country that has a little garden, but you've got to make sure that your garden is protected from your right winger who's going to come and steal it from it.
Or your next-door neighbor meth head.
Next-door neighbor, yeah, because... But, no, I mean, it is a good idea to have something in the basement. I mean, what I've been doing, because I'm not, I've just been throwing an extra bag. If I buy one bag of beans, I buy two. And I just store the other one away. So that's a good, safe way to do it, because, I mean, I just can't handle the idea of my wife and children going, oh, we're hungry, and there's nothing, it's all, it's messed up either due to inflation or...
Right. See, because there's this concept in this country of we're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean we're hungry. Mm. Well, we're hungry for a lot of people in this country means we don't have anything in the house that we actually want to eat.
Exactly.
We have a boatload of food to eat here, but we don't want to eat any of it.
Right.
And I'm guilty of that. I mean, but to know gut rumbling hunger, no. That's where the rice and the beans come in.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's just a mix. I mean, if you look at the overall situation, it's always a good idea to have something because these elites are going to kill us, Bob. I mean, I was thinking, and this is from a right winger. He's saying, and if the right winger says, "Oh, we're all in trouble," and you have no idea of the trouble that you're going to be coming down the pike, it's a good idea to look at your options. But you know, I still like to get you over maybe to New Zealand or maybe to Australia.
You would be surprised, but one of my little pet things that I do sitting back here behind the monitor is I go to various flight booking sites and just see what a flight's going for these days.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I looked at Charleston, West Virginia to Sydney the other day, and it came in at about $1,200.
That's not bad.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, granted, I think for that kind of money, you have to ride on the wing. But, that's where the parka comes in.
Yeah.
But
no, I, you can get the immigration papers. You can put down your job title as priest, I was thinking.
Agnostic priest.
Agnostic priest. Which might CNN. You might make the news, A young American is trying to get out of the United States to avoid the economic troubles, and he's putting himself down as agnostic priest. News at 11.
And, well, it wouldn't be the first time. If you recall Gene Hackman's character in the original Poseidon Adventure, he was some sort of, he was a whiskey Episcopal or something. And he was a priest who didn't believe in God. And yet he turned out to be the one who saved everybody.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it wouldn't exactly be. And then again, if you read the memoirs of Mother Teresa, you find out that she didn't think much of God either in terms of actually existing. She got to the end of her life and said, you know what? It ain't real. But you don't hear the church exactly trumpeting that. I want to take you back for a minute just to something you mentioned earlier since we were talking about food and so forth, and it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is a bit of a Donnybrook going around over something that the church, and when we say the church, we mean, the guy with the red shoes in Rome, may be up to. Apparently there's a document floating around authored by scientists that are connected to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences.
Okay.
And that document suggests, and you're just going to love this, Robert, that document suggests that there is a moral duty to adopt GM technology in order to combat hunger. Frankenspuds genetically modified corn and Jesus wants genetically modified crops in order to combat hunger. I read that story, Robert, and I was absolutely cross-eyed with it because there is no surer way to what you're talking about, if not via economic collapse, than by just plain old-fashioned biblical famine, than the world at large planting genetically modified crops in order to make Monsanto a little bit richer.
It goes back to the idea of just corruption. I mean, it's the corruption, not just of the money, but it's corruption of the education and the science, and everything's corrupted.
The topic of their discussion was transgenic plants for food security in the context of development. And they're saying special efforts should be made to provide poor farmers in the developing world with access to improved genetically modified crop varieties adapted to their local conditions. Well, you know, if you want to, yeah, sure. Give those to the poor farmers so the poor farmers can get poorer when they can't afford to buy the seed next year because they can't afford to pay Monsanto.
Right.
This makes me crazy.
Well, I mean, when I keep hearing about all this stuff, I've come down to the conclusion that, Bob, I hate to tell you, but I think we're all in hell, or let's call it purgatory. It doesn't make any more sense. I mean, it's such a crazy little reality we're all in. I mean, Rush Limbaugh's making $200 million a year, and you're trying to get by in 2000. It's like, it's all upside down. For example, I've been watching, we just finished up over here. I mean, we only get so much American TV, and the one that I do like was the one Lost. And at the season six, you realize where they were at, this island, and the island was basically purgatory. They all had died, and they're all in purgatory. And I said, after the last season ended and the last show ended, I said, I think that's where we're all at, you know? Because it's almost like no matter what we do, as you have said, they're playing 10-dimensional chess and they've got it all figured out. It's all wrestling, as you said. It's all figured out. It's like even with the Pentagon thing, they said global warming is the big threat. And people said, okay, they finally realized that. But these people are to the point of they're playing 10-dimensional chess. So they've got this all figured out. They've got the caches already in the Arctic or subarctic or Antarctic. They've got the people that are going to control society even in this collapse. In every situation, they got to figure out how they're going to control human society. And so even in that wild scenario where everything, you know, mankind's in the polls and we're down to 1 billion people, they're still controlling society. It's either the military or the elite. Or even let's talk about Barack Obama. I mean, Kevin had a good discussion about, you know, people not accepting black power, but let's look at the black power here. Cheney's indicted from Nigeria for...
But haven't the Nigerians now been paid off for that?
Yeah, maybe. I was kind of hoping that he'd be indicted. I was hoping that Obama, if he was worth his salt, would have put him on the plane the next day after the indictment came down, right? But you know, if let's say they weren't paid off, do you think Obama would have sent Cheney to Nigeria? The black man. Let's look at it this way: the black man protecting the white criminal from the black nation.
Oh, no, it's a scenario that is impossible.
Don't touch my white criminal. That's what he would have said.
Well, you know,
don't touch my white man.
Yeah, right.
Don't touch my white criminal.
And
I don't care. And
it's not, you know, it's not just the obvious reasons. It's also the fact that if you think about it, Barack Obama is out there and he says, what? He says, let's see. If something like that happens to me, and the right wing is as mean and rotten and hateful as it appears to be,
yeah,
then do I really want to let this happen to him? It's sort of a much more twisted sort of do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, well, I mean, even when he said, oh, let's not look back at the George Bush crimes, let's look forward. I said, oh, my God, what a con. You know, this is a con. And it's just, it's everywhere. It's a con, con, con. I mean, there's no way that any kind of working guy can ever get ahead. And so, I mean, it kind of gets me down to the situation of we are definitely in a hell situation. I mean, you're a fountain of reason and, you know.
But aren't we, that's Camus-esque or I don't know who. Who said hell is other people? Camus, Kafka, one of those rationalist, absurdist, post-World War philosophical types.
Right.
Well, isn't that's the same thing? If hell is other people, then this is hell because there's other people.
This is hell. Well, I mean, it's so much of the population. So it's almost like the dead 20 percenters, and there's 20%ers can and will have, or and if you look at all these books I've read, if they're the history, they've always ended up screwing up every single society. And it's always through the money. So, I mean, if you look at Ireland, I mean, you had this one, not even 20%, you had the 1% financial people absolutely killing that economy. I mean, I have no problem with speculation, but it's almost like I think we need a second currency, you know, the red currency, which, you know, you can speculate with, but don't mess with my currency, you know? So that, but it's always this system of boom, 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 and then when it goes bust, it's always the taxpayers that pay, or us, I should say. And I can see, I mean, 20 years from now, it's going to be the same old thing.
Because it'll just recycle. The cycle will reset.
Right. So, we've watched this during Carter, right? I mean, Nixon runs the war on the credit card, and Carter gets the inflation, right? And then we get the...
Then we blame Carter, and that gives us Reagan.
Reagan, yeah. So, I mean, the one book that said, I think it was the Aftershock, said that actually we could have gotten out of this back in 1981, but there wasn't the psychology of the people that was going to accept belt tightening. The right wing didn't want it. They wanted to use a credit card.
Well, no, look, Jimmy Carter gave that famous speech. He never said the word malaise even once, but it was immediately dubbed his malaise speech. When actually what he did was he gave America the good talking to that it desperately needed.
Mm.
But you know, the for-profit media and the people who managed the thinking and managed the information didn't like that. Because, you know what, a consumer culture can't be looking inward and can't be thinking about not consuming so much, because then the consumer culture comes all apart, Robert.
Yeah.
And when that happens, the whole house of cards begins to come apart. By the way, I've been reminded by both Marty and Sandra. No, it was Jean-Paul Sartre. Hell is other people. I should have known that.
Okay.
I was just doing it on the fly. But yeah, hell is other people. Robert, it's been a wonderful conversation, and congratulations on the tenure. That has to have been off your mind.
Oh, yeah.
Does that come with sabbatical somewhere along the way?
That's a good question. I have to, it's one of these things where it's, we need all the people, but you see, I'm the one that teaches the technical English to all the engineers, and so no one else can seem to do that. So, or no one has the interest in doing that. So
yeah, it's all hands on deck, and you're all the hands.
Yeah. Well, you know. English teaching is going through a boom here because the companies have realized the domestic market is kind of stagnant. So the only way they're going to make profits is to go, you know, to do some shopping or exporting overseas, and so that they need more English for that. So.
Well, if my adventures reading the manuals that come with motherboards is any indication, there are many more like you who are desperately needed. These things are a delight to read.
Oh, we have a thing of, you know, Japanese English, and it's really, you know, English that's been garbled, and it's actually quite funny sometimes. But a lot of it is they feel so confident that they know their English, and so they don't need a native check. And so it's like, okay.
You're a Southerner like I am. I can't imagine what it must be like when the occasional little bit of Southern English creeps into your otherwise good English, and the funny looks you must get.
Oh, you should hear me speak Japanese with a Southern accent. Oh, that's a hoot.
Arigato, y'all.
Y'all. Arigato. Gozaimasu.
Oh, Robert, have a great morning, my friend.
Okay, you take care.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Robert calling from Japan, and Robert never fails to bring his A game, too. You all do. We certainly have plenty of food for thought, even in the absence of the guest that I had booked. I got a couple of lines open, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on is the phone number, on your nickel, 304-658-3333, and we will continue. Oh, darn it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack.
How's it going?
You know, we're not freezing, so we're ahead of the game.
Oh, at least that. Ah, God, where to start? I mean, I hate to say it, but I kind of do see economic collapse not too far in the future. Stone's throw from here. And I really don't see any way around it.
Well, you know, in that context, let me share something with you, Cossack. I don't want to just hijack you away from your ideas. But in the course of the conversation with Robert, we were talking a little bit about food and about, you know, food for hungry people and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, or may not know, I don't know, I've mentioned it a number of times, the amount of money that is allotted to a person on food stamps is roughly or sometimes less than $3 a day. That's what we feed the poor on in America. I got a little story here that I've been sitting on for a while, and you remember a couple of months back when it was revealed that Tucker Carlson had spoofed, in other words, fraudulently misrepresented himself as Keith Olbermann's email account?
Yeah.
Really juvenile trash.
Yeah.
Apparently, that is Tucker Carlson's new shtick. You're not going to do well with this, but just sort of strap in, as Bill Hicks would say. Apparently Tucker Carlson's new shtick is fraudulently doing things and then turning around and giggling about them. The latest is a stunt in which Tucker Carlson over at The Daily Caller, or The Daily Caller is Tucker Carlson's thing, and a person by the name of Matthew Boyle, another one of these snobs of the right wing who think that food stamps are funny.
Oh yeah, he left right.
Yeah, posted something, and he said, this Matthew Boyle, what can you buy with food stamps? Pretty much anything sold in a grocery store other than tobacco, booze, and hot food. To find out what that really means, I took my November stipend to Whole Foods, a pricey organic food emporium that is as much a yuppie metaphor as it is a supermarket. In other words, this guy is admitting that he defrauded the food stamp system in order to do this stunt, this Matthew Boyle.
Correct.
My first stop was the seafood counter, where I found the thickest swordfish steak I could, which at $18.99 a pound also turned out to be the most expensive item in the department. Then I headed to the coffee section, where I dropped $11.99 for a pound of fresh roasted beans. From there, the milk aisle, where $8 bought a half gallon of pure organic goat's milk. Nearby was the cheese section, where I found a tiny wedge of fancy-looking cheese from some European city I've never heard of. Notice the snottery. And threw it in my cart. Last, I hit the produce section, where I discovered a small but tasty-looking container of chanterelle mushrooms, price $13.99 plus tax. At the checkout line, I whipped out my shiny new electronic benefits transfer card and watched the cashier ring up my order. The total, minus the cheese, which I discarded at the last moment, came to $51.10. Not bad for a gourmet meal, especially since I wasn't paying for it. When December 1st hit a few days later, I checked the balance of my card online and was surprised but pleased to see that the leftover balance from November had carried over. Flush with more government cash to blow, I went across the street from the Daily Caller office to CVS to sample the opposite end of the food spectrum. This is where he got $99 worth of Halloween candy, including Reese's Cups and 12 bags of Snickers. The cashier didn't flinch. He seemed like he'd seen it before. This is, this is disgusting. This really is the Marie Antoinette let them eat cake moment in America.
Yeah. I mean, fine, you can do that. And what are you going to do the rest of the month? What do you subsist on?
One chanterelle a day, I guess, but it doesn't look like Matthew Boyle could starve in a month.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. These people are idiots. I mean, I could take the average Social Security check and splurge it like that. But what do you live off the rest of the month? How do you buy your prescriptions? How do you pay your rent? How do you put food on your plate?
And he doesn't. That's the fun part. He doesn't care.
Yeah, but that's not dealing with reality. Realities are that, you know, people have to actually exist off this money, not splurge it. To these people, an entire EBT card or an entire Social Security check is pocket change in normal times. Have you ever seen the movie Life Stinks?
Oh, yes. Yes. Pepto.
Yeah. It's amazing how, you know, in a situation like that, or like trading places, you know, it's amazing what the world looks like when you're not riding on it. When instead of you ruling the world is ruling over you.
I don't think it's that they can't get it. They don't want to get it. Jesus, who was it? John Kyle of Arizona, pissing and moaning in the last 24 hours, Cossack, about the notion that the Senate might have to stay in session to finish Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the START Treaty. This is what John Kyle said. It is impossible to do all of the things that the majority leader laid out without doing... Frankly, without disrespecting the institution and without disrespecting one of the two holiest of holidays for Christians and the families of all the Senate, not just the senators themselves, but of all the staff.
Oh. Put a sock in it.
In other words, John Kyle has just accused Harry Reid of being part of the war on Christmas for thinking about the Senate actually doing its damn job.
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, the thing is, like I said, I think we're on the verge of an economic collapse at the rate things are going. And in addition, we're having an eco-historico-cultural collapse. If you look around, it's not real pretty. And you should know. You're sitting in the middle of it.
I kind of am.
You know, I'm preaching to the choir, but it is go to meeting Wednesday, so.
Absolutely.
You know.
And so, you know what? Sometimes the choir needs preaching to.
I mean, you know, that's the problem. It's the same thing that they're having next door to you in Pennsylvania with this fracking crap. And they're going to have that all up and down the Appalachian Mountains. That's insane to do this for a wide variety of reasons.
And by the way, you know, we were kind of crowing the other day that the New York State Assembly had...
Yeah, they overrode it.
Yeah, the governor vetoed it.
Yeah.
And he's got a second plan, but his second plan doesn't address the fracking issue with nearly the thoroughness that the New York legislature's plan had.
Of course. But, yeah, you know, money...
By the way, that's Democratic governor of New York.
Yeah. Well, again, as I keep saying, both sides are beholden to the same money masters. And it's much like those cartoons from the turn of the last century. Not, you know, the 20th.
Right.
Where you had those bags of money sitting in the Senate. You know, senator from oil, senator from banking, senator from copper, you know, written on these money bags. Well, what else do we have? What else do we have? I mean, we have congressmen handing out emoluments on the floor of the House.
Well, John Boehner just did that a couple of years ago.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, what can we say? We are in the Gilded Age for all intents and purposes. Where is our Teddy?
I don't think they make them anymore. Or at least politically speaking, Cossack, I don't think they're allowed to exist.
Well, not as a Republican, that's for damn sure.
Not as a Democrat either.
And I'm thinking not as a Democrat either.
You know, Bernie Sanders stood up and delivered a civics lecture. It wasn't a filibuster last Friday.
No.
It was a lecture on civics and the current state of affairs in the United States. Isn't it interesting that the only person willing to do that was a so-called independent, who's actually a socialist?
A socialist. Oh,
meanwhile, the two people who stood up with him, Mary Landrieu and Sherrod Brown, when it came nut-cutting time, as we say, they both voted for the so-called compromise in the Senate today.
Yeah.
And so it was 83-17, 81-19, a couple of people not voting maybe, whatever. But really, we got shown. I said it on the show last night, and our buddy Horst put a clip of it up on YouTube at his channel. And it was it was that opening of the program where I said, you know, anybody who thinks that the Congress can't do anything when they want to do something didn't see this thing move.
Oh, yeah. You know. Oh, we're millionaires. We actually make out like bandits, like the bandits that we are. Like the bought and paid for. I won't say it. Bob, I mean, just how blind are the American people that they put up with this crap? I can see it. You can see it. Good God, I think most of the people in chat room see it. I think most of the Horn family sees it. Why can't anybody else? We're not all gifted children here.
Sorry, that was, you know, you just dropped a rock on my foot. We're not all gifted children here. Oh, yes, we are. this is like Wobegon, baby. You know, all the men are, and all the women are, and all the children are above average. But no, you're right. We get it. But America doesn't get it because there, and you know, let's break it down, Cossack. There's a segment of America who doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
There's a segment of America who doesn't want to get it. There's a segment of America that has been told that the exact opposite is the actual received wisdom. And then there's a teeny tiny fraction of people who are actually paying attention.
You've read Time Enough for Love, haven't you?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Of course you have. And you remember the Notebooks of Lazarus Long?
Yes.
And I forget the exact proportions, but as you recall, he made a statement, something to the effect of, in virtually every society, there is a creative 10%. And from time to time, societies go crazy and attack that 0.1%. What ensues is called bad luck.
God bless Robert Heinlein. He had an ugly libertarian streak, but every now and then some truth rolled along.
Oh, he made a lot more sense than, I mean, I like his idea of libertarianism, though, because he imbued it with, you know, in Moon is a Harsh Mistress, just about everything he wrote, with a strong sense of duty. And that's something that I don't think there is anymore.
And the concept of duty, it probably had something to do with him being a Naval Academy grad. But that strong sense of duty certainly doesn't come through in the semi-psychopathic maunderings of Ayn Rand.
No. No, she was insane. I hate to say it. You know, Yes, hate to say it of a fellow Slav, but my God, she was
nuts.
Another year in a fruitcake.
Was she Slavic or Jewish?
She was Russian.
I mean, really, she wasn't Russian Jewish? I thought she was Russian Jewish.
Russian Jewish.
Okay. Does that qualify as Slavic?
I would think. Well, the thing is,
they're all semi-artificial designations.
Exactly, and let's face it. There's an old saying I heard, and I tend to agree with it. You know, it says women are sluts. Thank God for that. And if you
think, oh, you're gonna get me some hate mail.
I know, but I mean, and I kind of looked at it and said, huh? Because no, think about it. It is women who mix the pot as far as genes are concerned. It is women who determine, for example, when you're going out with a woman, one of you knows who's getting laid that night. And it ain't you.
We're in the hole now, Cossack. Please stop digging.
No, the thing is, women have to decide.
Right, yeah. Because they are the procreators.
Right.
We're just bees.
And that's why you always have mixing of different nationalities, different races, and so forth. And it's the women who determine that. And as the ones who procreate. And thank God that they do. We would have died out as a species.
We'd all have big ears, buggy eyes, and be playing banjos by now.
We wouldn't be here. I mean, as the old saying goes, if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Hear, hear.
You know, think real hard about this one. You know, the people with the biggest mouths are the ones who have the least to lose. They don't understand what they're talking about.
Well, that's what makes somebody like Doug Giles so doggone funny, sitting there talking about what a uterus is for. I certainly hope Kate is out there oiling up her chainsaw even as we speak.
Please, dear Lord, someone needs to shorten this guy by a head.
Yeah, James writing in and says, you know, men are sluts too. Thank God for that as well. Truthfully speaking, if you want to look at the behavior of men versus women in terms of muddling the gene pool, men are rapists. Because the way that happens is when you go on crusade.
Yeah.
And you just work off a little biological back pressure on the local population. That's how you. That's why there are still, in minuscule degrees, blue eyes being born in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's 1,000 years, 800 years, 700 years since the last 600 years, maybe since the last crusader left.
Right. Well.
But the genes are still popping up here and there when the dominant brown-eyed genes get just watered down enough.
Exactly. I mean, if you think of it, oh, by the way, I do have to give you a correction. The Russians had won, for all intents and purposes, in Afghanistan, as won as we won in South Vietnam, when we had the screws tightened. But that means what? By winning,
you're there forever.
Well, no, you have the city. You have the cities. You have the big, you know, the big cities. You don't have the countryside. You can't get from one city to the other without getting ambushed.
And the hillbillies still hate your ass.
Exactly. And you know that's what I'm saying. These people. Yeah, you know, Alexander, when he left Afghanistan, it was a functioning province, but it didn't function past the point when the last of Alexander's troops left. I mean,
actually, it's not that they left. They stayed. Many of them stayed. Many of his veterans retired there, and that's why there's a Kandahar province, and that's why there's an Iskandaria. Because those were the colonies that were planted. Alexander was a notorious colony planter, but there were statues of freaking Apollo. Sort of merging with the local gods. But over time, the genetics, there we are again, can't hold up.
No.
Against the great weight of populational pressure.
No.
Especially when they are, and, you know, I know it's going to drive the Klansmen crazy, especially when they are largely recessive genes.
Yes.
You know, I'm a blue-eyed guy, and I know, you know, it takes a lot.
Well, and genes do funny things. I mean, they do. They're, you know, for example, I've got, had, red hair and freckles. And nobody else in my family did, but my father's sister had them.
See, that's, yeah, both of my parents were brown-eyed. But I had one grandparent on either side who was blue-eyed. My paternal grandfather had blue eyes, and my maternal grandmother had blue eyes. So it trickles down to me through a pair of hybrid brown-eyed people, if we remember our, like, eighth-grade genetics or whatever.
Right.
Both of my parents were one brown-eyed gene, one blue-eyed gene, and they both passed the blue-eyed gene to me.
So you're the odd man out, so to speak.
Yeah. And yet I married a green-eyed woman, and I've got we've got blue-eyed children.
Hmm. Cute.
Yeah, indeed. Cossack, wonderful conversation, my friend. You have a great evening.
You too, Bob.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Bob?
Yes.
Hey, Bob. Hey, this is Chris.
Hey, Chris, are you on a speakerphone, buddy?
Yeah.
Could we go to the handset?
Yeah, hang on. All right, yeah, Bob.
Yeah, much better, much better.
All right, sweet, yeah, cool.
How are you? Good to hear from you.
Good. Good, man. Yeah, I'm just, still trying to, look for, work and stuff.
There is no tougher work. You're not looking for work, man. You've got work.
Yeah.
You're looking for the paying variety.
Yeah, really.
Because looking for work is the most brutal damn job on earth.
Right, really. Yeah, like it's been like I think 20 odd months so far.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. That's all right, though. I mean, you know.
Well, what's
still alive and still, you know, happy and stuff. So, you know, I'm not complaining too much.
Well, what's going on out your way? Are you still in the St. Louis area?
Yeah. I'm still here.
Cool. Freezing?
Oh yeah, like it's a good 30 here.
Well, it's brutal and getting brutaler. I guess we're supposed to start getting the fun freezing rain. That's snow I can handle.
Yeah.
ice and freezing rain just turns everybody into an idiot, and the power goes out.
Yeah. Very true, Bob. So, like, did you see that New York Times piece where Obama met with the Wall Street people and the executives?
Yeah, wasn't that charming?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I want to dispel any notion we want to inhibit your success. And where along the way did anybody... I mean, the notion was expelled by, you know, the Beckerhead and Hannity and the Limbaugh and the rest of that filthy crowd. But where has anything that Barack Obama has done in the last 2 years even remotely suggested that he was anti-business?
Nothing. Everything that he's done is pro of business. And now, the Wall Street people, want a bigger, at the White House now.
Well, what I thought was telling, because Chris, it shows how ideas start in one place and go to another.
Right.
You remember, what was it, a week or so ago, Newt Gingrich showed up on one of the Sunday blather fests and said, what we ought to do is let business tell us how much of a tax cut they need.
Right.
So lo and behold, ABC News interviews the chairman and CEO of UPS, a guy named Scott Davis, after the meeting with Obama. What does Scott Davis say? He says, we'd like to have longer visibility. We'd like to be able to see out 3, 4, 5 years to what policy is. That would help spur investment. I think understanding tax policy, you know, not just tax policy general, all policy helps when you're making investments. We make investments for long term. We make investments for 5, 10, 20, 30 years. You like to have a better feeling as to what's the environment going to be out 5 years. In other words, that is the application of a thumbscrew to Barack Obama's left thumb.
Right.
Because Barack has already made those mouth noises about how he wants to reform the tax code. You know, I just once, Chris, I'd like for one of these titans of industry to step up to the microphone and say, you know what we want? We don't ever want to pay no taxes, no more, never again. Just cut them all off, and we'll, because the purpose of the meeting was to try to, well, let's see, the paragraph from ABC News says, of primary concern to the president is the $1.8 trillion in corporate wealth currently sitting in banks and equivalent places not being spent on job creation. The 20 companies in the room represented at least $200 billion in cash and equivalents as of the third quarter. You reckon a little bit of that can help you out, Chris? You know, we're not even talking about a million. And the million is chump change compared to what they're sitting on.
Right.
Let's see. At the end of the third quarter, UPS, whose CEO wants to be able to see out 3, 4, 5 years, they're sitting on $3 billion.
Jesus Christ.
They're doing that having eliminated 18,000 jobs in the year 2009 alone.
Exactly.
Honest to God, I don't know what he expected to get out of that meeting.
Corporate welfare, Bob, that's all it is. It's just corporate welfare, corporate handouts, you know. And they just want a bigger seat.
But, you know, the other thing that just kind of made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up was this business from Moody's that I mentioned in talking with Robert.
Oh, yeah.
They're gonna downgrade our credit rating because of this deal that's supposed to create job growth,
which it won't.
Which it won't, and that's the whole thing. I said a minute ago, I don't know what the purpose of the meeting was. The purpose of the meeting was basically to hand over the briefcase of ransom. Okay, here's your $801 billion, like you asked for. Will you start creating some jobs now? Oh,
maybe.
You know, and all the CEOs are sitting there, Chris, with their little magic eight balls, and they're just a rubbing, and they turn it over, and it says, "Answer hazy, ask again later." Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. President. Answer hazy, ask again later. 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, hopefully after your butt's out of the White House. That's how it looks like it works to me. Maybe I'm simple.
No, Bob, I'll see you too.
I don't know where any good comes out of it, Chris. I just don't.
No, I mean, I don't see it. I mean, I don't know. It makes my head hurt that he's gonna like, you know, piss away all that money to a bunch of people that are not going to spend it, that are, you know, greedy and don't care.
Who don't need to spend it. Because we have no leverage. We have no pitchforks. We have no torches. You know, we sold the pitchforks and the torches to buy another month's groceries or pay the power bill in the dead of winter.
Exactly.
You know, it kind of takes me back to what I've been saying all along. They want it all. You know, guys, here's $801 billion. Well, I noticed you spent $50 billion on unemployment. We want that, too. Well, what else do you want? We want it all. We want it all.
Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all gone.
Right, because you know that 2% payroll tax holiday, that's going to be an extra few dollars in somebody's paycheck who's still got a job. Well, where's that extra money going to go? Now, if you listen to the Repiglickens, Chris, you know what a responsible person would do is they'd take that extra money from their 2% and they'd set it up in their own private retirement account. Hell no! That's going to be an extra cushion, so maybe one meal is hamburger instead of beans.
Exactly. Pay the house note or, you know.
Yeah, just try to keep the roof over the head.
Exactly.
And so, in other words, that 2%, I'm not trying to just be Mr. Negative right now, but I guess I am. That 2% payroll tax holiday, ultimately, they get it too. They get that too, Chris. Because it's going to get spent. And it'll and because that 2% will get spent, it's going to be called stimulus. Or it's going to be called stimulative. So, to recap, tell me if I'm wrong. $800 billion is going to just go in the bank and not be spent. Because the rich don't do that.
Right.
Meanwhile, that $50 billion is going to be spent. The people with the $800 billion are going to get that, too.
Right.
And that's the only thing approaching anything that might actually do the economy any good. That's it. Meanwhile, people, an individual making less than $20,000 a year and families making less than $40,000 a year are going to see a net increase in their taxes come January 1 thanks to this compromise. You know, I know Lawrence O'Donnell pontificated last week about how, well, who's going to have the highest rate increase when he was screaming at Alan Grayson?
Oh, yeah, that was so, oh my God, that just seriously just put me off.
And it didn't do me any good either, but he was screaming at Alan Grayson, who's going to have the greatest tax increase? The poor, that's who. They're going from 10 to 15%. That's a 50% increase. If we didn't pass this bill. But somehow Lawrence O'Donnell couldn't bring himself to mention the fact that by losing the making work pay tax credit and applying that as against the so-called tax extension of the tax cut, that it's a net negative for that 2040 crowd that I just mentioned.
Right.
Now, if I get this, and, well, here we go again. If I get this and you get this, you know, as Cossack said a couple of minutes ago, we're not all gifted here. I know I ain't. Why is this so hard for the gifted kids in the White House to, and the Congress to figure out?
I just don't know, Bob. I mean,
no, I have a theory. I think they do get it.
Greed.
No, I think they get it. They don't give a damn.
Well, yeah, that too.
I've got mine. You go get yours.
Exactly. Screw you.
Right, because this is America, and anybody can be anything they want to and lift themselves up from their bootstraps. I ain't got no boots.
Don't have boots, don't have laces.
Yeah. No straps. And no thumbs to lift with. It's tough, Chris, I tell you. It's awful good hearing from you, brother.
Hell yeah, Bob.
All right, you have yourself a good holiday season, my friend.
All right, you too, Bob.
All right, bye now.
All right, bye.
That's Chris, and if you've been to the chat room, you've probably met Chris. He's in the chat room under the moniker Blue Ape, B-L-U-A-P-E. Good guy. Real, real good guy. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
It's Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
Getting by. Barely.
Just barely getting by, huh? That's not good, but I guess there's not too much good.
But you know, I don't feel bad about it because I'm in the boat with a lot of good people who are in the same in the same boat.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to join you too. Being unemployed since March myself here. You know, I've been listening to your program via podcast because I've been out of the country for a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I heard Jim. Of course, I hear Jim a lot, but on one of your shows, I think he ranted like crazy, and I think maybe a lot of people out there feel the same way that Jim does, and I want to give Jim a lot of appreciation for the rants that he has given on your show, particularly in regards to Mr. Obama. And the Quisling, the appeaser, because I think he was right on. And also, I think you were right on, too. I want to give you a lot of credit, too, when you brought up the To Kill a Mockingbird. And there does come a time when you just got to stand up and fight. And unfortunately, this SOB in the White House does not understand that we've been taken and getting beaten up for 30 years. And there comes a point where there's nothing left for us to do. You know, where you just lose total hope and confidence, which is about where I am right now with these son of a bitches. And also, I want to give my thanks to Spike on your show, too. I think Spike brought up some good points, particularly having a passport, something we have to do, to be ready for, because...
Yeah, because otherwise they don't have to build a security fence. The absence of passports is the security fence.
Right, at least you have another choice. It's always good to have a choice. And I don't think there's any question. Mr. Obama is not on our side. He's not on the side of working people. And I heard on another program...
But Andy, what about all his prating about how he's doing this big giveaway so that he can get an extension of the unemployment and make sure people's middle-class taxes don't go up on January 1?
He can take my unemployment check, and he could shove it up his rear end. That's the way I feel. I haven't taken a check in a couple weeks. And the way I feel about this government, I don't feel like taking anything from them. But he can take my check and put it up his rear end. And you know who he can... All I want to see is I want to see those rich son of a bitches start to pay. I don't care if I don't get an unemployment check. I want to see them start to pay. I want to see that inheritance tax at 55%. Those son of a bitches brought us into war. And Abraham Lincoln knew after the Civil War that the rich people ought to pay because they are the biggest benefactors of keeping this country in one piece. And they should pay. And when it came to the Spanish-American War, Teddy Roosevelt knew the same thing. He knew that it was time for an inheritance tax and time for the rich people to pay. And Woodrow Wilson knew the same goddamn thing. What is the story with this moron? Why aren't the rich people? I want the rich people to pay. I don't care if my taxes get raised. You can raise my taxes all you want. And to put the, and like Jim went a linear over, putting the friggin' blame on federal workers and freezing their pay, what the F is that all about? Like they caused this deficit? They caused these wars that caused us going to these deficits? And now we're going to go into a $900 billion deficit? And you talk about tax cuts. That only brings back 37 cents on the dollar. The unemployment checks at least bring a multiplier of $1.67 on every dollar.
I thought it was actually higher than that, but still, it's more than a dollar.
Right, but 37 cents on a dollar for a tax cut? That's ridiculous.
And just as a sense of perspective, Andy, and I don't mean to interrupt or anything, but just for a sense of perspective, it bears repeating. We're talking about the difference in letting the tax cuts expire. We're talking about the difference between 36% and 39%, not 36% and 56%. It is 3 stinking percent on the rich. Yeah, it's 50. Yeah, it's 50%. It's a 50% difference on the working poor.
Right.
But as a function of actual dollars, that 3% is a hell of a lot more money into the treasury, which actually, and I go back to this notion that government is worth having. And
I've seen a range of from $40 billion to $100 billion a year with that 3 percentage points on that top bracket. And I tend to, and $70 billion I think is the GSA number that Obama keeps saying. You hear the fascists on the right say $40 billion, and I've heard Alan Grayson say $100 billion on that little 3%. Make them pay. That's what I say. Make them pay. They complain about the deficit. They complain sideways about the hypocrite son of SOBs that they are. And now, just because of that measly 3%, they get all this savings.
Yeah, and if you follow, for instance, what Robert was talking about early in the program, if indeed there is a time coming when the wheels are going to come completely off, again, let's remember that it'll be the same people who were sitting there bitching about the Obamacare. They're the ones that have 10 guns in their house, and they're going to come. They will come and steal the food from the people who have been responsible and scrimped and saved and put it back and put aside and put away and had their garden. You know, it's ant and grasshopper stuff. It's elementary, Andy. That's what I don't understand.
Right. When push comes to shove and we get to a point where people are starving and people are in need of food, it's going to be the lower class people that get hurt. I mean, the rich people will be fine. The people living off those coupons, just clipping those coupons, are going to be fine. They're not going to have any problems. It's going to be the lower class people. They're going to be in their compounds. Like with Blanche Lincoln, who set this up for the Walton family. They'll be in their compounds, and they'll be protected.
Nice thick walls. Yeah. You know, and it reminds me of something that's been going on in my head for a long time that I really feel uncomfortable giving much voice to at all. But if what really, and I'll ask the question again, and I'll ask it as gently as I can. We talk and we worry about the 99ers, and my concern is real because I live around them, okay? In fact, I am one. But I'm so far past being a 99er, I can't see 99 with a goddamn Hubble Space Telescope. But what does it take to get them in the streets? Because they're not going to be paid attention to as long as they are politely saying, you know, more please. But as the fact of the matter is, like talking with Chris, you know, if you've sold your pitchforks and torches just to eat another day, you're in a spot. And if you do have a job, you're working two jobs, and you don't have time to carry a sign in no daggum demonstration. And so this is where I get a little bit lost, Andy. I don't know how this plays out. Is it Sandra's permanent underclass? Is that where we're going? The new normal? Because that's a scary daggum America.
The only answer I have is I just think the American citizen overall has been made so docile. I talked to my sister-in-law, who's a teacher in New Jersey, the other day, and they're getting hit really hard by this Chris Christie, big fat oaf, is cutting back on everything for teachers. And I'm there, you got to get out in the street. The only thing you could do is strike. If you guys, you're in the union, the teachers union, no, but you, we can't strike. We're not allowed. It's not permitted by state law. Well, goddamn, you got to break the law. No, we don't do that. You know, they're just not bred that way.
Well, then what's going to happen to you is going to happen to you.
Right.
And you will have allowed it to happen to you without uttering so much as a peep. I mean, where's he? This ain't the NFL. You know, when there's an NFL strike, the owners bring in scab players. You know, the guys who couldn't quite make the cut. Well, what are you going to bring in to replace teachers with?
Well, there's never a dearth of scabs out there, Bob. You know.
Well, a scab, yeah, because a scab will do anything for money. A scab is the lowest form of life that lives.
Right. I didn't tell you, but I was in a demonstration a few weeks ago that was pretty neat. You know Ray McGovern?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know Daniel Ellsberg.
Right.
They did a thing for Bradley Manning, you know, the WikiLeaks dude, and they did it in San Francisco. This was like 4 or 5 weeks ago, I guess. And we had a nice little demonstration. We maybe got 100, 150 people to show up. We marched through San Francisco on a Saturday, and we actually picked up some tourists with us to march with us through the city. Which was pretty cool. It was pretty neat being that close to Daniel Ellsberg, seeing as what he's done.
And apparently, they've taken the show on the road because I believe it's tomorrow that they will be involved in what is hoped to be the most massive rally in recent memory in regard to ending the wars. Both Ray McGovern and Daniel Ellsberg will be speakers at this Veterans for Peace rally in D.C. in front of the White House.
Right. They've been doing a lot to try to help Bradley Manning out and Julian Assange with WikiLeaks, and I think like you said, they're doing a protest, maybe 152 ex-CIA and ex-analysts and government workers and so forth, and they expect some pretty massive arrests. see what happens. I guess there's nothing new for Mr. McGovern. Great. Those are the great Americans, as far as I'm concerned. These are the people that really, you know, like that Mark Zuckerberg getting ahead of time on time.
Oh, doesn't that make you sick?
What effing bullshit? I mean, excuse me.
That's okay.
That is just a crime. What a scumbag. And so many of these people put their, like a Julian Assange puts his life on the line, or a Ray McGovern or Daniel. You guys put their lives on the line. I mean, take a real risk and, you know, put themselves in jail. And here you got this, just a pig going to get his face on the cover. And another thing, too, it was neat. I was in Europe for a couple weeks. And it was amazing how much coverage WikiLeaks and Julian Assange is getting. And I don't know the language all too well, but you could hear WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks just all day long. That is getting so much news, and also the content of a lot of those emails. And you know what the really Europeans are really upset about, it appears, is just the push and the shove that the United States has put on a lot of these environmental treaties, the climate change, like in Denmark and the recent one in South America. And the Europeans are, you know, a lot of emails put on that the pressure, especially on the South American countries and like Bolivia and so forth, that the U.S. is putting on these countries, you know, to water down the climate change. Because I think in Europe, they're much, much more attuned to what is going on, because it's happening to them. And I'll say, I was just there. It didn't stop snowing. It was just snowing like crazy. The amount of, I won't say humidity, but, the wetness in the air that the air is sucking up is just amazing. I've never seen so much snow in some of the places I went to that I've been to other years, but man, there's a ton of snow there. Ton of snow. They're just totally snowed in.
And again, harsh winters, harsh everything, extremes. These are the predicted hallmarks. But that's okay, because the right wing's out there and they've got a massive megaphone and, oh, it's all bullshit.
I was in Prague and they shut down the trams one night. I got stuck. I had to walk a few miles through the city to get home, and the snow was like up to my knees. I mean, it was amazing. And the trams couldn't run.
Man, that's Napoleon. That's Napoleon marching back from Moscow snow.
Yeah, and they're used to that kind of weather, supposedly. But man, it did them in.
Well, by the way, you're getting fan mail. Patty just wrote in and said, "All I can say is go Andy. He has it, Bob." So
it's just such a shame. I just come to the conclusion: Obama is not on our side. And then this thing with Social Security knocking down the rate from 6.2 to 4.2% on the payroll tax. Oh, God. Talk about, why don't you just hand it over to the Republicans, man? Why don't you just tell them, destroy Social Security right here? The anti-Roosevelt. Why don't you just tell them to destroy the trust? Let's just blow up that trust fund right now and give it to Wall Street, man. Jesus, that guy is just working against us.
Yeah, and I mentioned the idea of putting that the 2% on your payroll tax savings, putting that in your own personal retirement account, you know, like a right-winger would say you should. Sandra mentioned, she said, yeah, right. Put that 2% in a savings account that gets 0.001% big returns on that.
Right. Or put it into some mutual fund or some other investment and watch it just fade away.
Yeah, die a slow.
If you're a professional investor, it's hard to make money, let alone doing it as a goddamn amateur. Come on, give me a break.
And yet these, you know, these account managers, I was listening to Malloy the other night, and he mentioned, again, that car wreck case out in Colorado where the account manager, the billion-dollar account manager for Goldman Sachs, ran down a bicycling physician with his Mercedes-Benz.
He's crippled for life.
Yeah, he's crippled for life, and the guy is not going to face any kind of felony charge, no matter the egregiousness of his conduct.
Oh, he'd lose his job as a high net worth wealth manager then. Oh. The guy freaking did a hit and run. He ran away. You know what? The only way they caught him was he had to get his car fixed. And they found that the dents in the car were done by a human body or a bicycle. That's the only way they even caught the guy. I think he was reported in by the body shop. The guy ran away.
anybody
but when
they
you're
put the guy away,
right? But when you're running accounts of that size, in that culture, and you can speak to it better than I can, Andy. In that culture, those guys achieve rock star status, don't they?
Well, certainly you get a lot of friends in high places. No question there. You know, a lot of people in high places that could probably do a lot of favors for you. And when you got judges and politicians being paid off left and right by big money, I'm sure that's what probably happened. The guy made the right phone calls through his contacts.
I'm hearing from John and Gail in Australia via Twitter, Andy. They say Andy is exactly right. WikiLeaks is the issue out here in the rest of the world, especially because of the U.S. overreaction. You know, I think the rest of the world can kind of get away. They can kind of deal with the snarky, nasty, narcissistic, shitty the commentary in these things because, being grown-ups, they recognize that we all talk about each other that way. But it's the reaction. You know, it's Alan West calling for censorship of the papers that publish the stuff, and then the guy doesn't even have the stones, Andy, to stand by what he said. I don't know if you caught this or not, but now he says, I didn't say censor the media. I said censure. Because even a right-winger talking about censoring media, that gets people's hackles a little bit up, because the next thing you know, maybe Rush Limbaugh wouldn't be able to go on the air for 3 hours a day and just lie out his OxyContin ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely, from what I heard, he wanted this West from Florida, the new congressman, yeah, he definitely wanted to censor all the outlets that were connected and putting out anything dealing with WikiLeaks. He's ready to go after them big time. Shut them down, which would be the New York Times. And how can you go after a guy like Assange, who's just a messenger, and not go after in the same vein, like Le Monde, or the El Pais or something like that, the Spanish newspaper, or The Guardian, or Der Spiegel, everybody else who's printing the same, or the New York Times? Why aren't they in the same boat as Julian Assange? They're the messengers, too. Why don't you just shut them all down? But I think people in other countries are getting I think they're understanding now how heavy-handed and totalitarian the United States government has become. That's what I think I was hearing when I was in Europe, that they just can't believe the tactics being used by the United States that's supposed to be this bastion of democracy and freedom of speech, just doing everything they can to shut this guy down. No matter what it takes, the ends justify the means. This guy is going to be shut down. And I think that's what people are getting. I think the world is understanding now they have a monster on their hands. They have something like the Third Reich to deal with in the United States now. And look who we got ahead of it, the smiley face that's in charge of it. And still, it continues. The defense industrial complex, the Pentagon, these masters of the universe just continue to do the same policies they would have done under Bush, under Obama. It just doesn't stop. The heavy-handedness, secrecy at all costs to protect the crown jewels of the espionage that the United States, foists on the rest of the world. I think that's what gets people upset.
Well, I think so, and I also think it's a little grow-up moment for the rest of the world, too, because, as you said, there was this myth of the great American bastion of freedom, and there was a worldwide outpouring of relief and joy at the election of Barack Obama. And are you getting the sense that they're getting disabused of that? That you can change the guy at the top, but the infrastructure remains the same. See, part of what continues to bother me, Andy, is I always have in the back of my head that article that Cy Hirsch wrote as the Bush administration was on the way out, saying, "Watch out! They have absolutely Swiss cheesed the U.S. government with little sleeper cells of loyal Bushies."
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that totally. I think that's a lot of, especially in the Justice Department under Eric Holder. And Eric Holder is nobody to brag about either. But I think the Justice Department, like you said, they completely gutted, and they put their own people in there, and just getting them out of there, it's going to take years. And unfortunately, I think Obama's only got two more years left anyway, and we're back to the same old garbage.
Well, this is totally nuts, Andy, because as John is pointing out, the opinion of the U.S. outside and in the wider world is currently way lower than even it was even under the Bush administration.
Isn't that something?
It's depressing is what it is.
Isn't that something? Now, I just know from what I heard, every time I listen to it's called Chesky Rozhlas, the Czech radio, national radio, and also the Slovak national radio. Man, that's all you heard was WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks. Just all day long. It's just amazing how much coverage I thought it was getting. And they're, you know, keeping right on top of what's going on with Julian Assange.
Well, I think, you know, to their credit, Andy, I think they're trying to keep him high-profiled. Because if he's not famous anymore, he's that much easier to kill.
That's true. That's true. The more the world knows what's going on, the safer he's going to be.
You know, my God, over on Fox, and I can't remember the creepy bastard's name, but he was some sort of campaign mucky-muck, communications director, maybe even campaign manager, from Mondale back in 1984?
Bob Beckel!
Yes. There you go.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you're aware of what he went on Fox and said about Julian Assange.
Want me to tell you what he said?
Then you know.
A dead man can't leak stuff. There's only one way to do it. Illegally shoot the SOB. That's what he said.
Yes, he did.
Let's bring in the special forces or a little CIA job. We'll bring in Bush, George H.W.
Blackwater.
He's the master
Blackwater.
Of that.
Blackwater.
Do it. Bring back George H.W. He'll take care of that. Yeah, that's what Bob Beckel said. Yeah, there's a good Democrat for you. Beautiful. Yeah, just the thing that really has depressed me as all hell is what Obama did with that Social Security, that 6.2 to 4.2% Social Security payroll tax roll down. Now, that's really got me. Like, the Republicans needed any more help in destroying the Social Security Trust Fund, and here he is. Thank you, Mr. Obama. It took a Democrat. You know, it always takes a Democrat. Like, Clinton comes in and destroys Glass-Steagall, and now you're going to have a Democrat destroy Social Security. It takes a Democrat to just destroy things. Jeez.
Well, you know, David in Tennessee and I, in one of our little consultations, had a long conversation about that old saying that, you know, only Nixon can go to China. And what that really, really means.
Right.
And what it means is that, you know, only an old red baiter, only an old communist hater could have opened the door to communist China. Because it's something that would never have been tolerated out of a Democrat who was, you know, ab initio deemed to be about halfway red anyway. So only, you know, only Nixon can go to China. And what you're seeing with Clinton and Glass-Steagall, what you're seeing with Clinton and the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Right.
What you're seeing with Barack Obama and this tax cut extension giveaway is, And most importantly, with the 2%, Andy, is only Nixon can go to China.
Right.
No Republican in his right mind would ever have expected to be able to do away either wholesale or incrementally with Social Security.
Right.
But a Democrat can.
Right.
Because it's ours.
If a Republican tried to lower that Social Security, the rate, down 2 percentage points, all holy hell would break out. The Democrats would go crazy screaming, and people would be in an uproar. But Obama does it, and he gets away with it. And you think the Republicans who took over the House are ever going to allow that 4.2% rate to go back up to 6.2? Forget it. They will never allow that.
No, because it fits, among other things, Andy, it fits right in with their starve the beast mentality.
Absolutely.
And to them, Social Security is a beast.
Right, and it's got to go. It's to be privatized.
And again,
it shouldn't be being an insurance company, period. Period.
And again, that 2%, ultimately, I mean, you know, there's some degrees of attenuation, but they get it. It's theirs. They got to wait for it to get spent, but it goes into the stream of commerce, and it goes to them, and they get it. They want it all.
Right.
And frankly, a corollary to they want it all, Andy, is they want it all by any means necessary. You know, the so-called highly fictional left has forgotten by any means necessary. The Repiglicans have it carved on the inside of their eyelids.
Right. The goal is to destroy Social Security. The goal is to get that money in Wall Street's hands. And any way they can do that is acceptable. Period.
It's Machiavellian. The ends justify the means.
Right. Any way they can do it, they will do it.
You know, George Bush, when he was reelected, sort of, in 2004, you remember when he stood up and said, I'm going to spend, I've got political capital and I'm going to spend it now. Remember when he did that? And he said he was going to spend it on reforming Social Security?
Yeah, I sure do.
Even that...
After he lost the popular vote and he's got all this capital. Sure he does.
Even that dirty bastard didn't think about dumping the payroll tax rate. You know, we were going to have savings accounts and all that happy hooey.
Mm-hmm.
But even Bush didn't do that because Bush couldn't go to China.
No.
It would have outraged. I mean, there would have been marches. The little right wing think tanks would have been paying for buses to Washington D.C. if that had been proposed by George Bush.
No, they would have filibustered. The Senate would have actually filibustered. The House would have gone crazy. No, the Democrats would have been in an uproar. And they were. I mean, the only thing that you saw the Democrats actually really go to the mat with was Social Security. That was the only thing with Bush they really went to the mat with. Everything else, particularly the Supreme Court picks, they wouldn't go to the mat with. But with Social Security, they would. And who does it take to undo it, of course? But like you said, somebody that can go to China can undo it.
You know, basically, forever and anon, we were told that the political third rail in American politics was Social Security. And people would haul out that letter from Dwight David Eisenhower to his cousin saying that any political party that proposed an end to Social Security would cease to be a national force in a matter of less than a generation, I think were the words. Or in a matter of years, even.
Right.
Well, the plug has been pulled on the third rail.
Right.
And the rail is getting greased.
All I can think of is, too, what I heard a comment today by a woman that I thought said it all. This train car during the Great Depression, I could see those bums sitting around a fire, and the train car says, Roosevelt is your friend. And I could just think the train car now would say, Obama is not your friend. If you're the common working class person, I mean, Obama has proved he is not your friend.
And even the stuff that he does right, and I believe in giving credit to people when they do things right, is problematic. Look at the stimulus money that went to Wisconsin and Ohio for, you know, you mentioned train cars, and it reminded me of this. That was inspired. I praised because I believe in mass transit that doesn't involve airlines, that high speed, sustainable, energy efficient. Wisconsin's incoming governor and Ohio's incoming governor turned down the stimulus money. The stimulus money got pulled back. That cost thousands and thousands of jobs in Ohio and Wisconsin. Because why? Well, you know, it was a boondoggle, they said. What's his name? Kasich in Ohio wrote a letter to Ray LaHood saying, well, we don't want the rail line, but we'd sure like the money. No, you don't get to keep that. And oddly enough, Rick Scott, that creepy little felon down in Florida, he couldn't quite bring himself to turn down the railroad money.
Right.
But, I mean, that had long-range implications. There was a Spanish rail car manufacturer that had located in Milwaukee.
Wow.
Because the thing was going to get built. It was going to be a simple rail line between Madison and Milwaukee. And how that couldn't be helpful, I don't know. It was going to put a, ton of people to work building it, and then the rail car manufacturer from the Spanish firm was going to employ up to 125, 150 people. And as soon as the governor said, "Nah, we ain't doing it," you know, because he's a teabagger, then the rail car company said, "Well, we're shuttering the shop. See ya. It's been nice. We'll go somewhere that wants us."
One reason I love to go to Europe in Prague is I love to ride on the trams that they have. And you get a pass, and it's good for anywhere you want to go. And you can get everywhere. And I just love riding those trams. And they're built there. Matter of fact, that same tram company that they use in the Czech Republic got a contract to build trams in Washington, D.C. And I was always thinking, man, having some extra money to invest, I'd always just love to own stock in a company that does those trams. I mean, what could be a better thing? And also, you mentioning Madison and Milwaukee. I used to live in Madison, matter of fact, for a period of time.
Lovely place.
And it is a lovely place. Man, if you're a lefty, that's a place to hang out, no doubt. And
if I could stand the weather, I'd be there.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's bitter cold there. But that ride from Madison to Milwaukee is something I traveled quite a bit, because if you want to get any kind, you want to go to a decent airport, or you want to do something, or go to a decent restaurant, a lot of times you got to go to Milwaukee, or there's, you know, a lot of events and a lot of things going on in Milwaukee. So that's traveled, that route has traveled quite a bit. So actually that's I would think that would be a great idea, that they should be able to.
Well, it was a beautiful incubator. It's exactly what you said. It was a beautiful incubator of the potential success of intercity rail.
Right. And also another place is like the Front Range of Colorado, from like Fort Collins down to Colorado Springs. I used to live in that area. God, that would be a perfect place for a tram or rail line system to run, because those are frequently made runs where you just can't buy the goods you need and the things you need unless you go to Denver. And to be able to make that kind of ride without having to take an auto would just put so much the burden off fossil fuels and taking a car.
Which,
there's just so many places in this country where that would fit.
Yeah, and I don't know how that legislation could have been written so that it had to be built. But can you imagine 40 years ago a Republican even governor coming into office on a campaign promise of, "We ain't going to build no goddamned interstates"?
Yeah. Well, that's, again, when you had a 91% top tax rate, a guy like Eisenhower could build the interstate highway system. They could do that. And it kills me, too. You've got this bum in New Jersey, Chris Christie, who wouldn't build another tunnel into New York. You ever try to work in the New York area and get in and out of the city? It's hell. It is hell 24/7. God, if a place ever needed more transportation and more means to get into in and out of a city, it's New Jersey, New York. And the bum got the money, and the contribution from New Jersey was minimal, like 10 or 15% of the total cost, and he couldn't do it, couldn't scratch the money together. Idiot. That's idiocy. It's totally, you know, we're going to die from within. It's just like Khrushchev, or I think it was Khrushchev.
Yeah, conquered without firing a shot.
From within, and we are going to die within, because we're not willing to build the infrastructure, the stupidity of this country. Instead, give the money to the rich instead of giving it to our infrastructure and actually increasing the GDP and having growth, and they make their money there anyway through investments.
Well, you know, going back,
we're just waste away to nothing.
Going back to the specifics of the Ohio and the Wisconsin scenarios, Andy, and it's, I don't know if you've got the answer, because I don't. Anybody who does, I would love to have it explained to me. This was done a long time ago. Why is it that an incumbent governor who hasn't even taken office yet can kill a project that's already funded just on his own damn fiat? How does that work? I mean, isn't that a symptom of broken government as well?
That's just stupidity. It's ideological stupidity.
I mean, did the several states build, and I don't know. See, that's one of the differences about this program. I don't pontificate. I don't know.
You know,
did the several states build the interstate highway system? Did it take an agreement from West Virginia for Kentucky to be linked to Pennsylvania? There's something, because I've had this thing rolling around in my head for a long time. There's something broken about that process.
Right. I think that the process that these morons have, these Republican morons have, is if it can't pay for itself, if a privatized system can't pay for itself, then you don't do it. If it can't make money, like this moron Mitch Daniel from Indiana who sold all the highways there to private companies.
Yep.
But if they can't pay for themselves, if you can't jack up the costs on these commuters, on these people using it, and have them pay for it themselves, then it can't be used. They have to compartmentalize all these little projects and do these cost-benefit analysis. Well, if that's not going to... But you don't look at the big effing picture and you say, wow, if we actually build this and we subsidize like they do all over the rest of the world, it'll make us competitive. We'll actually be competitive in commerce because things will be inexpensive to transport across the country. Lives will be, quality of life will be better for the people. That doesn't come into play at all. But instead, the Europeans and these other in China are eating our lunch. Because they're doing these mass trains. They're doing these bullet trains. They're subsidizing. Everywhere else in the world, mass transit is known you have to have it subsidized. That's the way you do it. It's got to be to make it cost effective for commerce, to make it cost effective for commuters. It's something you subsidize and have a better quality of life just because you want to move around people in the most efficient, effective manner. You have to have it subsidized. And these Republicans, that does not penetrate their pea brains. The Republican pea brain cannot understand the common good and doing things for the best benefit of society. That does not penetrate the pea brain, the reptilian mind of a Republican that just says, privatize, privatize, privatize.
If profit, profit, profit.
It, you don't do it.
Yeah, profit, profit. Holy right. Profit. Yep.
I've had my time.
Andy, this has been great. Welcome home. Look forward to hearing from you again.
All right.
Take care.
Take care. Merry Christmas to everybody. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye, Andy. Andy, back home in the USA, and it's open question as to whether that is for the better. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Tony, what's up, man?
I'm good. Just got home from work, catching the tail end of your show, but here I am. Before I go any further, great call, cause. I know you were on about an hour ago, but that was good. And for Chris, keep looking for that work, man. Keep your head up. You'll find something.
And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned Chris's search for work because I got a note from David in Maine, if you'll let me share it real quick. He said, a suggestion for Chris, Malloy reads letters of those looking for work. There are always inventive entrepreneurs listening and willing to help you out if you make the effort to ask for help. It's nothing to sneeze at, and I think it would be a valid idea to shoot Malloy a heartfelt letter and tell your story. Maybe he'll read it and someone will be listening.
Well, that'd be cool. Real cool.
And in that case, truly, given the scope of Mike's audience, he says the platform is the whole world. The powers that be want to demoralize you and come crawling back to them and eat your soul. But you have the platform and you should utilize it. Many blessings in pursuit in the job search. And to quote a lyricist by the name of Ezo Sprock, I don't make a living. My living makes me.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, he's down with that. He'll put it out there. Anyway, going on to something else. I can never pronounce his name right. Julian Assange or
Assange. Assange.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's funny how all these people are calling him like socialist, communist. 150 years ago, he'd have been a patriot.
Yeah.
Now he's a communist.
Yeah, or 237 years ago.
Yeah, he'd have been a patriot. They'd have said he'd have been like Thomas Jefferson or.
Well, and he is a hero to a lot to the vast majority of the world.
He's a hero to me. Michael Moore offered to pay his bail.
Michael Moore did pay his bail. Michael Moore ponied up $20,000 of his own money in conjunction with some other people to make sure that he got bail. But the thing is, the Swedes kept him from being released.
You know, Hannity's head must have exploded when Michael Moore put the bail. Can you imagine what he said about
it? You know, I thought when I read that story, Jesus, I hope Michael Moore has bodyguards.
Oh, you know what? You know what? I was listening the other day, not to change the subject, but he was on Amy Goodman talking about how he was one of the first people. Remember when he won for Bowling for Columbine, how he said he was against the war? Do you know that he actually had to hire bodyguards because he would be coming out of coffee shops and people would throw hot coffee on him?
Not surprising. That's the way right wingers, repiglicans, and now baggers behave.
And he talked about several times where his family was threatened. They burned effigies in his yard. And he asked him if he would do it again, knowing what has happened now, if he would do it again. He actually said, well, I'm not too sure. Because, I mean, think about it. This guy walks it like he talks it. A lot of guys out there say they're in, but Moore put it, he's the only guy that stepped into this guy's defense. You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, I want to ask you something about Afghanistan. You probably heard about this. I don't know the company. They're Contractors for America. And maybe you can help me go in the right direction with this. They're taking kids from other families and giving them to Afghan seniors for sexual favors. Have you heard something about that?
Sex trafficking in Afghanistan is horrible.
Who's the company?
American Contractors. I don't know the name of the I read the story too, but I don't know the name of the contractor off the top of my head. Someone out there does, and I'll get an email.
Okay, Bob. Here's one of the reasons why we're not going to win. This is a big one. I don't have kids, but you do, right?
Right.
Let's do a little role playing. You're a poor Afghan villager, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a family, right? Pretend it's Doodle, your kids, but you're an Afghan now. An American contractor came in and took your kids and took them and sold them to somebody else, right? Follow me?
Yeah.
God forbid. Where are you going to go? Like I always tell you before, who are you going to go to?
Yeah, sure.
You're going to join up. And if it's only done one time,
congratulations! Yeah, congratulations. Here's your new Taliban the identity card and your certificate suitable for framing.
Well, if we're doing that, then we've lost. But again,
Tony, don't think that this is something isolated, because there's a long and sick history in this country and other white countries of taking native people's children and sending them off for early re-education. Canada did it to its native population. We did it to our native population. I think of the Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania, where the late great Jim Thorpe played football and made a name for himself in the early days of the 20th century and went on to be a tremendous athlete at the Olympics. We did it. The Australians did it. It's an old and dirty history. It's a way that you think that you're going to get. It's a way that you think that you're going to eventually pacify the natives.
If you were in Afghanistan and they did that to you and they took your kids, you would join the Taliban, wouldn't you?
Yes, and you know I used to argue that back when I had to deal with wing nuts. Mercifully, I don't anymore.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, you people who, and this was back in the worst parts of the Iraq War. What we need to do is send more troops over there and show them ragheads what it means to mess with America. We need to put a boot in their ass. You know, that kind of talk. And I would just ask them, you know, if somebody invaded here, would you pusillanimous punks have the guts to fight back, or would you be across the lines and trying to help your new masters? I think they'd do that. Because right wingers don't understand and they don't acknowledge the right of the right of native peoples to be sovereign in their own native lands.
Yeah, they're a bunch of wannabe Toby Keeps, you know what I mean? So they can sit there and talk all that stuff, but push comes to shove. Anyway, you know, so that's one of the reasons we've already lost. Going on to something else, Geraldo Rivera. I hate to say this, Geraldo Rivera, Glenn Beck, and that guy Andrew Napolitano, the one that has the show on Fox.
Yeah.
Right now they're actually questioning the history and the facts about 9/11. I know it sounds like it'd be a dead horse, but they question the government story. Where were these guys when Bush was in office?
Well, they're only doing it because eventually they'll find some way to blame progressives. You know, there'll be a progressive with his hand on the plunger at Building 7.
But these guys. They were nowhere around when Bush was in office, even though I don't know, who knows what really happened, we're never really going to know, but even if there was if 1% of the evidence is true, where were these guys? They were nowhere around, they wouldn't even...
Well, where were they when Bush was running up the damn deficit they bitch about?
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know, the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are the biggest part of the deficit problem that we have, Tony. Not screaming at you, mind you.
Well, you know, I understand. Don't even sweat it.
But I got one for you because you have shared on the air that that you were Muslim.
Oh, I am. Yes.
And
I'm not one of the crazy. I'm not one of the crazy ones. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, I was raised in a fundamentalist church, but I'm not one of the crazy ones either. Or some would say that I am. I don't. But I got to share this story with you before we go. It comes out of Washington, D.C. Apparently, there's a delegation of Israelis at the
Here we go.
The Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Apparently, and you know, if you've been to Washington, D.C., you know that there are a lot of Muslim folks in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
They are emigres who are thrilled to be in America.
Sure, go ahead.
The Israeli delegation has informed the staff of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel that they don't want no Muslims working on any of the floors where they are.
Are you serious?
I wish I was lying.
And this is an actual story for real.
Yes.
Oh my God! What country do we live in? I don't know. That really, this is a real story.
Yeah. One supervisor explained to a Muslim worker that the Israeli delegation, which included Defense Minister Ehud Barak, quote, don't want no face-to-face with no Muslims, unquote.
Oh my God. That is really...
The workers in the hotel were subjected to State Department background checks because the Israelis were visiting.
Well, I guess there's going to be a lot of Israelis turning down their own bed. No.
We'll just find some non-Muslim brown people to do it.
Oh, that's disgusting. That really is disgusting.
You know, and I don't know if it's an organized union hotel, but if it is, there is no way that you don't go out on strike over this.
Doesn't that leave the hotel? If the hotel complies with them, that leaves them open to a lawsuit, doesn't it?
No.
Does it?
I don't think so. Let's see. One African emigre. Said, in the cafeteria, they were looking at me laughing, saying, they don't want you there. They may think you have a bomb in your belly.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And then he said he'd worked in proximity to other VIPs, including George W. Bush, with no security concerns. And then here's what he said. Now, this guy is a Muslim from Africa, and he says,
okay.
I don't care about Israel. To me, it's just another country.
Yeah.
I work for the hotel 12, 14 hours a day, and they profile me like I'm a criminal, like I'm going to harm them. I'm like, if I'm going to harm them, why would you keep me in your hotel even one day?
You know the funny thing about it? Here's a guy who works for a living, right? He's just trying to get through life. He's trying to go home. I mean, life is hard enough as it is, right? I mean, you know what it's like. You go through it. I go through it. I really need all this extra stuff, really? I really need all this extra stuff. I'm just trying to get to my ship without.
Well, what kind of blows my mind, and it's another one of those incidents where the Israelis have, the Israeli government has become what it most hated. Because there was a day, in the 20th century, there was a time when German dignitaries visiting abroad had to be assured that they would not be, served or be brought anywhere in proximity with a Jew.
You would think people that had to go through that would be a little more understanding. You know what I mean? Hey, listen, I'm not trying to change the subject, but I know you're getting short of time. I'll ask you one more thing, all right?
Sure.
Okay. This is, well, I was talking about the difference between rich and poor people. Or not poor people, but working class people. Rich are scared out of their mind, and I'll tell you why. Because they know that if we ever get organized, we're unstoppable. I'll give you a perfect example. Remember, this just goes back to what working class people will do for as opposed to what other people will do. Remember a while back, was it about 6 months ago when you were having that septic tank problem?
Yes.
It was about 6 months ago, right?
Yes.
Okay. You and I know you. You're a good friend of the man. I don't know you 100% because we've only been around each other a little while, but you're definitely a proud man. You have a family, and you're a proud man. Any man is proud. When you went on the air and you started stating your situation, and you weren't looking for, you weren't really, it must have been hard on you because, in a way.
Well, I didn't even start that conversation by asking for anything.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying, though. And when people started donating it to you, it must have been a little difficult on you because obviously you are a proud person. I mean, it must have been a little hard. But people that you didn't know, and maybe you knew a little bit, they came through and they did what they could to help you. And they did help you, right?
It was massive. It was a massive help.
But like what I'm saying before, that's if a rich person saw somebody that scares the hell out of them, because they know that we as people, working class people, will always side with each other over the boss or over the person in charge. That's the way it's been. That's the way it always been.
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. And I think.
Well, in large part, I would go so far as to make the argument, Tony, that because on, and I'm not talking about that specific situation, because that's one of the most stunning, humbling moments in my entire life.
Yeah.
To watch that outpouring of kindness and concern.
See, but rich people don't get that, but go ahead.
Well, the thing is, we have lost, in the broader world, the ability to do that for one another. Unions, when they first formed, they had strike funds, and I guess they still do technically maintain them.
Yeah.
But we know a lot about them here in West Virginia, because during the worst of the worst, strikers would be thrown out of their company-owned houses. And strike funds would be used to purchase tents and purchase, basic, flour, beans, rice.
Remember that movie Fifth with Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah.
Remember the part when the strikers were sitting around there and one of them was playing guitar and they had the women were cooking meals for them and everybody was hanging around drinking and it was like one big family even though they weren't related to each other?
Exactly. And let me give you another scene similar to that. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend the John Sayles film Matewan, Matewan, because there's a scene similar to that where the West Virginia coal miners are living in tents, or maybe they're not in tents yet, maybe, but they're trying to organize the union, and a ways down, you hear one of the Italian miners playing a mandolin.
Yeah.
And one of the African-American replacement workers brought up from Alabama begins playing along with him on a harmonica.
There you go.
And a ways down, further down the line, a hillbilly starts strumming along with a guitar and a fiddle.
There you go.
And the next thing you know, you've got it's a similar scene. I highly recommend the movie.
There you go.
But you would like to have that kind of thing. But the never forget that the right wing's entirety of its goal has been centered on making sure that working people don't do that.
There you go. I'm gonna say one more thing and I'll let you go. And this may be a little bit off the subject, but I hope you follow what I'm saying. All these right wingers who are racist and stuff, and all these, like these white supremacists, and everything. When you talk about destitute, what you're talking about, like people, different races getting together. They were interviewing James Cameron on the air one time, and he I don't know how it went that direction, but he made a statement that Hitler was wrong. If you're gonna make the ultimate race, you want to get the best from every race. You want to get the best from this race, the best from that race, the best from that race. And if you put them all together into one big melting pot, that is the master race, for lack of another word. We need diversity. We need people from, like, for example, I told you before, I'm Hispanic. I should be Catholic, but I'm a Muslim, right? Okay, I mean, there's not too many, I don't run into too many, and when I run into Arab guys and I tell them I'm a Muslim, they go, really? And they look at me like they're shocked. That's what makes our country great, though. We can all mix together, and you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, if we want to.
If we want to.
If we can overcome the deliberate divisiveness of the white right, sure. Absolutely.
But also the politicians trying to put us up against each other. Anyway, Bob, thanks a lot.
You have a great evening, Tony.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bob.
Yeah, I saw the story about the Israeli delegation at the Mandarin Oriental in Washington, and I thought, yeah, don't these guys have a union? Because why wouldn't you walk out and say everybody turned down your own sheets over this? That's institutional. That is institutional state-sanctioned racism. And it's sickening. It is truly sickening. I had an email from Jim a little bit ago. He said, subject line, passage on the Titanic. I feel like a steerage passenger on the RMS Titanic who has heard the prophetic words, there's talk of an iceberg, ma'am. And I guess that's kind of what's going on here. Marty emailing in with the answer to the question, the company snatching up kids to sell into the sex trade in Afghanistan, is that paragon of American corporatism, DynCorp, D-Y-N-C-O-R-P. Of course, I am not surprised. We are about 11 minutes or so away from the end of tonight's prayer meeting. And we need a really good story just to sort of wrap it all up and bring it all to an end. And I think I've got it. Really, I do. We talked a little bit about mass transit earlier. While mass transit for the wider world generally means trains, buses, yes, but trains. In the United States, it means buses. And it means poor folks on buses. Because mass transit has been ghettoized in this country. I offer you a follow-up comment from our buddy Robert in Japan. He says, I just wanted to add a word about trains. I went to the National English Teachers Conference last month, which was held in Nagoya. It is quite a long distance from my city to there. By car, it takes over a full day of driving. By train, it took 4 hours and 15 minutes by bullet train. In other words, to get to Fukuoka from my city of Kitakyushu, which is an hour and a half by car, it takes 15 minutes. I recently went to Kagoshima last weekend, and the bullet train is halfway done to that city. It was fast on that line. The other line was done by express train called the Sonic, which was nice, three times as fast as American trains. But it is nice to go really, really fast. Keep in mind that China now has the fastest bullet train. Keep in mind also, Bob, that as long as there are Republicans, you will never know what it is like to ride a bullet train. Never. It is pork, after all. Nor will your son or your grandson, Bob, as long as there are Republicans. And all it takes is that awful 20% to gum up the works. Shame. Not to depress you, but there we have it. And to think that the conservatives here have all seen the light and we are now moving to the next stage of maglev trains, which are twice as fast as the bullet trains. They are now putting in a line from Tokyo to Osaka, which makes the trip down to an hour instead of 2.5. And I can only imagine what that is by car. Cheers, Bob. Robert. In the quiet moments, I weep for my nation. This is a vast continent. A vast continent. And the only thing that stands in the way... Is there a continent on the planet that cries out for a bullet train more than North America does? Well, China, Asia, the largest of continents, sure. But my God, one of those maglev trains, how long would it take to get from New York to L.A. on a train of that speed? Robert's right. We will never know. Never, ever know. My grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren will never know, for the simple reason that in this country there are godforsaken, sorry, piss-poor examples of human beings called Repiglickens. No, in our country we know of mass transit only, by and large, as buses. According to the New York Times, there is a full-on hissy being had in Fort Worth, Texas. Of course, we have to end Prayer Meeting Wednesday in Texas. What's the hissy being had? It's over advertisements on buses. The advertisement says, millions of people are good without God. Now, granted, in Fort Worth, Texas, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a church. But it is a simple message that says millions of people are good without God that has the city in a fulminating uproar. The New York Times writing, "The reaction from believers has been harsher than anyone in the non-believers club expected. Some ministers organized a boycott of the buses." Yeah, you know, because there was a boycott of the Montgomery buses when Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat. You know, civil rights, basic human rights. By God, that's worthy of a boycott. And so, too, is a message that says millions of people are good without God. We'll show them. We'll boycott the buses. Like those dumb fundy bastards ever rode them in the first place. Some boycott. Some ministers organized a boycott of buses with limited success. Limited success because they don't ride them. Other clergy members are... this is the scary part. Other clergy members are pressing the Fort Worth Transportation Authority to ban all religious advertising on public buses. And a group of local businessmen paid for a van with a Christian message to follow the atheist-messaged buses around Fort Worth. Sweet jumping Jesus on a trailer hitch. A van. A Jesus van. To follow buses with a message that simply says millions of people are good without God. Do the fundies in Fort Worth deny the reality of that statement? Because recent polling data indicates that, 20% of America is quite happily living their lives without benefit of an imaginary friend. I guess the Texas clergy, the Fort Worth clergy, have declared that they are in fact not good people. And they are willing to censor. And that's the interesting thing. Other clergy members are pressing the Fort Worth Transportation Authority to ban all religious advertising on public buses. Well, that's fine. But that would not ban that message. Because it's not a religious message. It is a statement of fact. Religious messages are never delivered from a factual standpoint. Religious messages are always delivered from a standpoint of faith. Because you gotta believe. It's a nice thing about atheists. They don't have to believe anything. They know it or they don't know it, and that's the end of the inquiry. Unless you're in Texas. Where their imaginary friend is so pitiful, so puny, so putrid and so weak that it can't even tolerate, its followers can't even tolerate a message that says millions of people are good without God. So that's prayer meeting for tonight. I think we got by okay without our guest. I was really looking forward to the conversation, but you know, you'll have that. Thanks to those of you who are contributing to help us make our way toward our December fundraising goal. Some of you have gone above and beyond, having heard what a thin month it's turning out to be. I thank you. I thank you sincerely. We are struggling our way. As of this day, we should be at $1,250. We're at about $650, $675. If you can help, it's appreciated. Thanks to all of you who do help. Thank you. And to all of you who listen, thank you. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. You'd be surprised how much of this program develops out of the back and forths of the little writers' conference. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes all the streams and the podcasts and the RSS feeds and all that go. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina.